and it relates primarily to stopping new houses being transacted.
Beleaguered Chancellor Rachel Reeves could scrap stamp duty and replace it with an annual property charge. How would you be affected? Plus,
I just spoke to President Putin indirectly, and we're going to have a phone call right after these meetings today.
The price of peace. Reports that Ukraine will buy $100 billion of US weapons funded by Europe to guarantee its security as Trump speaks to Putin. Does the President of the United States deserve credit for yesterday?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock. Donald Trump says he's spoken to Vladimir Putin to begin arrangements for a summit between the Russian and Ukrainian leaders. It follows a meeting between the US President and Vladimir Zelensky at the White House yesterday. The talks included the topic of future security guarantees for Ukraine with US involvement. Speaking afterwards, President Zelensky said he is ready to meet Mr. Putin. His words are spoken through a translator.
Russia suggested first bilateral meeting Ukraine-Russia and then trilateral. As I have been saying, we are ready for all formats on the level of leaders, but because only the level of leaders is the platform to solve all of the issues.
European leaders who attended the talks gave a largely positive account while stressing the need for an immediate ceasefire. Mr. Trump has continued to dismiss that idea as a prerequisite before any truce. But Sir Keir Starmer says the meeting marked an important step forward.
I always said that we would need a US backstop. I'm really pleased, therefore, that now we're coordinating and working with the US on what that is. And we're working on a common understanding that this is an Article 5-like guarantee, if you like, which gives you a real sense of what we're working on.
Israel has yet to officially respond to a new plan by mediators for a 60-day ceasefire in Gaza. Hamas has reportedly accepted the proposal in exchange for the partial release of some Israeli hostages. A woman known as the Ketamine Queen has admitted supplying the drugs that contributed to the death of Matthew Perry. The Friends actor was found dead at his home in Los Angeles in 2023. US prosecutors say Jasveen Sanger will plead guilty to 5 federal charges. She was due to go on trial next month. A charity is warning teenagers are being bombarded with extreme self-harm content on social media at a higher rate than 2 years ago. The Molly Rose Foundation analysed videos recommended to a 15-year-old girl's account. It found more than 95% of videos recommended on Instagram Reels and TikTok were found to be harmful. The findings were made in advance of the Online Safety Act, which the government insists will protect children. Instagram and TikTok say they remove 99% of such harmful content and contest the report. A new research suggests more than 1 in 4 parents across England will go without food or heating to afford school uniforms. ParentKind also found more than a third of families plan to use buy now, pay later schemes to pay for them. A draft government bill is proposing to cap the number of branded uniform items required to 3. And you can read the exclusive reaction to the findings by the school's minister, Catherine McKinnell, on the LBC app. And LBC weather, sunny spells for Wales, southeast of England and the far west of Scotland, some heavy rain for the south later in the day with highs of 25 degrees. And a quick look at the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 91.57, it closed up 18 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Don Menegales.
Imagine a Euro Millions jackpot. Now make it
massiver!
Get that Euro Millions feeling this Tuesday with a chance to win our incredible
£210 million jackpot.
Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Subject to currency fluctuations, the jackpot is capped at €250 million. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick.
Morning to you, 7:03 the time. Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at breakfast here on LBC. Hope you find you very well this Tuesday morning. Coming up,
in our manifesto, we committed to reforming stamp duty land tax to raise revenues while supporting those buying their first home.
Stamped out is a tax more than 300 years old, designed originally to raise money to fight the French. But now reports suggest that Rachel Reeves could scrap stamp duty and replace it with... We'll bring you the details. Also,
This pub has added a service charge to its pints now, even when you order at the bar. I'm LBC's Fraser Knight, and I'll be claiming my money back off Tom for this one.
Not sure. The Central London pub now charging extra for ordering at the bar. We've sent Fraser, hopefully, to remonstrate with them. And
look at the ecological work I'm doing here on my way to create what I'd like to describe as a biological supermarket.
How much does size matter? Farmers sound the alarm over shrinking veg and supply shortages because of one of the worst harvests in a generation. We'll be down on the farm.
Call 0345 6060 973. Tweet at LBC. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Very good morning to you. This hour,
an honour to have the President of Ukraine with us. We've had a lot of good discussions, a lot of good talks.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. If I can, first of all, thank you for the invitation and thank you very much for your efforts, personal efforts to stop killings and stop this war. Thank you.
President Zelensky seemed to be visibly holding his tongue, sitting in his new suit next to President Trump in the Oval Office yesterday. After the disaster of the last time the two met there, Zelensky kept his counsel, but I thought you could practically see his knuckles whitening. When he was forcing himself not to respond to Trump's praising of Putin and his affirmation that the US is done spending money on Ukraine. Even barbs about his clothing and the lack of elections were taken on the chin this time by Zelensky. Here's the moment that the same reporter who questioned Vladimir Zelensky about his lack of suit last time was called on by Trump.
President Zelensky, you look fabulous in that suit.
I said the same thing.
Yeah, look, you look good.
I said the same thing.
Yeah, looks good.
I said the one that attacked you last time.
I remember that.
Yeah, I apologize to you. You look wonderful. No, my first question for you, President Zelensky.
In the same suit. You see, I changed you.
There's a lot of anger there. The substance of the extraordinary wartime crisis summit seems to be that a meeting between Putin and Zelensky looks more likely. Trump saying peace could happen in the next 7 to 14 days, but that Ukraine would have to buy weapons from the United States. The Financial Times reports a $100 billion deal funded by Europe would see Ukraine buy US-made weapons. The Kremlin says it would reject any NATO forces in Ukraine, but the US hasn't ruled out providing troops there. Trump called Putin yesterday afternoon. Zelensky says he's ready for a trilateral meeting, possibly in the next week or two. It's still very much all up in the air, but does President Trump deserve some credit for getting it to this stage? Sir Ben Wallace is the former Defence Secretary between 2019 and 2023. He has written extensively about this issue, indeed a piece in The Telegraph today. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme, Sir Ben. Your thoughts on what you saw, heard from yesterday's meeting?
Well, the plus side is it didn't descend into the sort of Rottweiler bully scene that we saw in the Oval Office last time. And Zelensky was given his place, as he should do, as a president fighting to defend his country from a brutal regime. I think also it showed Trump had to, in a sense, give way. He had to entertain the European leaders. Originally, you know, in Trump's mind, this was all about him. Well, it usually is all about him in his mind. And that, you know, he was going to be the great deal maker. And I remember ages ago writing a piece saying that unless the people who've got skin in the game are actually in the room, if you remember that rather odd Saudi summit where the Russians turned up, sat in a room for hours with the Americans, then you won't make any progress. And so at the very least, the people who've got skin in the game, Europe, because it's our security as well as Ukraine's, Ukraine, who are fighting and dying, and it was, you know, joined currently the most powerful man in the world. So there's a plus there. There was no negatives. You know, Trump was very careful not to rule things in and not to rule things out, which was uncharacteristic of him. But I also think that, you know, we've got to a stage there potentially there might be a summit between Putin and President Zelensky. We'll see. Nothing else has been firm, there's quite a lot of speculation in the media about troops on the ground, etc. The one thing that's constant in all of this, Tom, is that Russia rarely changes its tune. To be fair, for a regime that spends most of its time lying and deliberately spreading propaganda, when it comes to its geopolitical positions, it doesn't change. It's been very clear it won't tolerate NATO troops or European troops on the ground, even though it's not its country, but it just determined to not do that. He's been very clear, Putin, throughout, that he wouldn't have a ceasefire. He hasn't got one. And throughout, Putin continues to lay claims to the wider oblasts of Donetsk, etc., and refuses to give. And none of us have seen any indication of any give at all. Yeah. What we've also seen is that Putin seems to be more on the side of Russia than the West and our democratic values and Zelensky, which does worry me if...
You mean Trump? Side, sorry, Ben. Do you mean...
Donald Trump.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, Donald Trump. Donald Trump, if you notice, he takes the Russians' lines. He tries to view Putin almost as greater than an equal of Zelensky. And you can see in all that, I mean, one of those ridiculous Rottweilers in the Oval Office asked Zelensky, when will you stop sending Ukrainian men to their deaths? Well, that's very easy to answer. That's when Putin stops illegally invading. And when your country is invaded, you don't send people to war. They funnily enough, do their duty, join up and defend their nation.
Well, one of the things you seem to worry about, certainly in the pages of the Telegraph this morning, is that we are on, your quote you hear, on the cusp of another 1938 Munich conference. That Trump plays a kind of, what, Chamberlain role in waving around a bit of paper saying, I've secured peace in our time, the reality being Putin ignores it.
Yeah, I mean, if Trump, and he's talked about land swaps previous to this summit, if Donald Trump concedes Putin's demand to not move the front line or give Putin the most important part of Donetsk from a strategic military point of view, that's the sort of big belt, the forest mm-hmm. belt up in the north west of the country, then what he does is he allows Putin to consolidate, go away, rearm, and he has a perfect strategic springboard and geographic position to further invade when he wants to. It also fixes troops, Western troops, if they are potentially deployed from Europe, in one part of Ukraine to police a Putin ceasefire rather than a Ukrainian one, while he goes off and rearms. And then it sets up what we call a strategic dilemma, is that at the moment, none of our forces are big enough to be able to have alternatives elsewhere. So you have thousands of troops fixed in Ukraine, and Donald Trump starts eating away at Estonia or yes. Finland, and then we're in a difficult place.
I know it's a very difficult question to answer quickly. What would you want to see to have done differently?
I think I would like to have seen, first of all, a very clear statement from the United States that security guarantees will include US forces or troops alongside Europeans. I would have liked to have seen Europeans be much more specific about their investment in defence. Seems to be the only investment, seems to be European money into American defence from the Washington briefings. Yep. Actually, what we need to do is put our money where our mouth is and continue to stand firm and united with Putin. That, to be fair, European leaders were very clear, not with Putin, sorry, Zelensky, European leaders are very fair in making sure that their language matched President Zelensky's. The problem was there's still doubt because President Trump's language seems to be matching that of President Putin's. And that is a worry because a non-united front is the very thing that Putin wants, a sort of division, and that emboldens him.
Very good to have you on. Thank you for your time. Sir Ben Wallace is the former Defence Secretary. Listening to that at 7.13, Matthew Bartlett, Republican strategist and former Trump appointee to the State Department in the first term. Thank you for coming on the programme, Mr. Bartlett. Your view of yesterday and whether you think your former boss deserves credit, even if we haven't got anything concrete out of it necessarily.
Yeah, hey, good morning, Tom.
Morning.
I could opine about the credit that Donald Trump should get. That is absolutely not the point. This is not about Trump. This is about potentially ending a war and a peace deal. And just candidly speaking, directionally, this is headed in a far better direction than it has in years. President Trump, you know, had the meeting with President Putin. Mm-hmm. Consulted with the Europeans prior to that. There are reports that even pushed back against Putin on the Donetsk, whereas Putin wanted all of it. He said, then maybe we should end this meeting. Putin supposedly relented, had a tremendous day here in Washington. It is shocking to hear Sir Ben, but I'm not going to comment on that. I think
why is it shocking?
preposterous to hear him say that Trump parroted Putin's lines, really don't want to get into partisan nonsense or whatever. Let's just focus on what did happen, which was the seeds of a security agreement, a shocking, again, probably never before seen non-NATO talk of French troops, British troops, Trump not even ruling out U.S. troops, a security agreement in there. The notion of Zelensky potentially being open to the very painful concessions that may be needed. More importantly, saying very bravely that he is ready to meet Vladimir Putin. It seems as if, again, there's a united front of those that are eager to make peace, a very, very difficult process, yet it is far preferable. Yes. To just the horrific status quo right yes. now. So again,
in the same way
in Washington, yes. and we'll see what happens.
But as Sir Ben was trying to make the argument for, in the same way that a peace agreement was good in 1938, with some land handed over to Nazi Germany and Hitler saying he wasn't going to invade any further.
In 1938,
that was good, but obviously it precipitated something that was absolutely catastrophic.
I would reject
that comparison.
A very naive and potentially dangerous comparison. I mean, let's just be clear here. If Vladimir Putin was Hitler, viewed as such, we would all have our armies in Ukraine. We'd be rolling tanks into Moscow. This would be a massive escalatory war that I don't think is in anybody's interest. So again, feel free to take an offensive posture. Feel free to, again, the realities of this are brutal, are painful. And the notion of this is Hitler is just, and this is World War II, and we're going to have some sort of military conquer win is just, you know, fantasy. It's just not the case right now. This is going to be a war that is going to be end diplomatically. And again, peace is sometimes just as hard to do as war is. But let's just be clear-eyed about this. Let's also remember that the Europeans last year bought a record level of LNG gas from, you know, Putin, from Hitler, if you will. So again, this is complex, inflammatory rhetoric. It potentially makes it worse all around. I would agree to that. Putin is evil. Putin is a murderous, invading dictator, who has taken land at the barrel of a gun. Yet we are forced, we, the world, if you will, are forced to find a way to end this, make safeguards to ensure this doesn't happen. And again, I think directionally speaking,
it's in a better place.
Day.
Yeah.
It's,
Matthew, thank you. Matthew Bartlett is a Republican strategist and former Trump appointee to the State Department in his first term. I wonder whether you think, is that not unquestionably the case? It is much better, isn't it, to be talking about maybe a peace deal in 7 to 14 days and Zelensky meeting Putin and a security arrangement, even though if we're paying for it, and we are apparently, according to the Financial Times, $100 billion to buy US-made weapons to help Ukraine defend itself should the worst come to the worst, plus maybe some boots on the ground in Ukraine, that's to be worked out. Is this not in a better place than it was 2 years ago, a year ago, 6 months ago, pre-Trump? This is now in a better place to maybe make peace, or you worry about the nature of the peace that is being made with a much more sympathetic to Putin president in the Oval Office. 0345 6060 973 is the number. We'll come to your thoughts on what you saw and heard yesterday. Plus,
we know that electric vehicles cost a bit more than diesel and petrol vehicles, and that's why we're offering this discount up to £3,750.
Announced with huge fanfare there by the Minister for Future Roads, Lillian Greenwood, the government's grant on electric vehicles. But not a single vehicle has so far qualified for the 3,750 electric car grant. The EV market has stalled as a result. The only cars that you can actually get money off aren't even on the road. Who thought this through? We'll get into the details. 7:18 news headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Donald Trump says he's spoken to Russia's President Putin to start arrangements for him to meet Ukraine's leader, Volodymyr Zelensky. Hamas has reportedly accepted the proposal for a 60-day ceasefire in Gaza in exchange for the partial release of Israeli hostages. And US prosecutors say a woman has admitted supplying the drug ketamine that contributed to the death of the Friends actor Matthew Perry. LBC weather, sunny spells for Wales, the southeast of England and the far west of Scotland. Some heavy rain for the southwest of England, highs of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Traffic's being held on the M1 southbound just after Junction 10 at Luton Airport. It's all down to an accident and there are queues on the approach. Still very slow on the Essex stretch of the M25, anti-clockwise from Junction 29 at the A127 to 28 at the A12, and that's all down to an accident that happened earlier. And then also in Essex, there are queues on the A13 westbound to the Lakeside turnoff, and that's also following an accident. On the trains, Southern services are running between Hastings and Ashford International. That's all down to a track problem. Still a reduced service on the Heathrow Express for emergency works. And on London Overground, there are severe delays on the Suffragette line.
This is LBC.
Save this bank holiday with Lidl. Bring the heat with 2 for £7 on barbecue meats like burgers, jumbo sausages and more holiday heroes. Only with Lidl Plus. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this bank holiday.
18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 27th of August.
This is LBC.
Train to Pevensey Bay. Beach, mates, cooler. Oh,
Danny, you got the hummus, yeah?
Of course.
Now this is what it's all about. Time to relax.
Huh? Frisbee? No, you two crack on.
Just made the train. Now home to over half the beach from my bag. 10 out of 10 day, though.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Hurry, the Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss out on up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, you can still get £50 off your electric blind order, an easy way to control your blinds. But be quick, these offers end 26th of August. And if you find the same product with the same service for less, we'll match the price. Book your free in-home appointment today. Visit hillarys.co.uk. The Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss it. Conditions apply.
At This Vets, me as the owner, surgeon, rota manager and puppy wrangler. And now she and her team are cybersecurity experts too.
Mia, someone tried accessing our system. Phishing scam. I blocked it.
BT Security Awareness Training turns your team into your first line of defence. Quick to set up from just £1.25 per user per month. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Thankfully, not just Mia's. Search BT Business Cybersecurity. T&Cs apply. Prices exclude VAT at 20%. 12-month minimum term applies.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Morning to you, 7:21 the time. Tom Swarbrick here in for Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Lots around today. We're going to pick up on some fantastic pre-budget speculation. Yeah, I know, I love this stuff. Do you know stamp duty is a tax that is hundreds and hundreds of years old? It was originally designed so that we could fund a war against the French. And now it's being reviewed, apparently, according to the papers, because it's an absolute drag on people selling their homes. It is, in this radio presenter's view, something akin to state theft, frankly. So we'll talk about the future for stamp duty. We'll speak to a minister in a few moments' time. There's a horrendous detail for the government when it comes to their £650 million electric vehicle grant, which has seen absolutely nothing happen apart from the electric vehicle market in this country slowed down. So we'll get into the details of that as well. But eyes and ears are obviously drawn to what happened yesterday at the White House. An astonishing summit. Really, we've never seen anything like it before, to be frank with you. A sort of wartime crisis summit, hastily arranged, that was all smiles, but behind the scenes there was some real anger, I'd have thought, about what it was the American president was saying, about the manner in which he engaged with President Zelensky last time around, certainly, and how reporters engaged with him this time around. Here's Ollie and Ayrshire. Tom, I found it really difficult to listen to last night, embarrassing almost. It's like every leader that was there was rallying around King Donald. Yes, sir, no, sir. Three bags full, sir, says Ollie. Here's Bobby. Tom, I'm 35. I hope by the time I'm 45, we rely on America for nothing. That should be priority number one for all of Europe. Sean's in Tavistock. Hi, Sean.
Yeah, morning, Tom. How are you?
Yeah, good, sir. Your thoughts on yesterday?
I think Trump comes across as a Putin sycophant. He surrounds himself with sycophants, the old bow to Donald. But he doesn't realise his role. His role is to defend freedom and liberty. in the Anglo way, what every president has done before that. What he needs to understand, Putin has carpet bombed civilians in Aleppo, Chechnya, Belarus, Georgia, Crimea, and now Ukraine. A one-year-old child was murdered yesterday in Ukraine by one of the drones. What Trump should understand is, he's there to defend Anglo-Saxon freedoms, the old Anglo way, what we enshrine in their constitution, what Ukraine wants. And he doesn't get the job.
But the problem is, Sean, the problem is we've had 3 and a bit years of this. We've had 3 and a bit years of saying Ukraine must win, but never quite defining what winning means. If we say Ukraine must win, that means all the territory that Russia has claimed through its invasions from 2014 onwards needs to be Ukrainian, then I'm afraid we're going to have to commit British troops, French troops, American troops into fighting Russian troops. Do we want that? Answer, I would gently suggest, is no, we don't want that.
One thing Putin doesn't like is people who stand up against him. Let me give you one example.
But just talk through what that means, Sean. Be really, really direct about what that means. That means British servicemen and women dying in an eastern Ukrainian hellhole to try and retake a piece of land called Crimea.
You know what? I did my 10 years service in the military in the 80s. I was prepared to lay down my life for that flag, right? We need to come together to defeat totalitarianism. He's a mass murderer, Putin, in Hitler mode. Come together, NATO. But we need a president to lead it. And at the moment, we've got Putin's sycophant. He's dangerous. We need somebody to lead the West. And it's not Trump. He's all about the money. He wants a Trump Tower in Moscow. I mean, I'm counting on you, everybody.
He is asking that, according to the Financial Times, that in order to help its security guarantees, Ukraine buys $100 billion of American-made weapons. Europe is going to fund that, we're told. And you heard him yesterday say, when it comes to financing any of this, America's out.
Well, you know what? We have to step up to the plate. I tell you what, Sweden and Finland now in NATO. It's a massive eastern flank, that is. Gotland, the island in the Baltics, is hitting distance to Kaliningrad, south of Lithuania. We have to think strategic now. We have to put the money in and defend our borders against this fascist dictator.
All right. Sean, I really appreciate it. I understand the strength of feeling, and thank you very much indeed for your service. 0345 606 0973 is the number. More calls on that to come. 7:26. Next.
We want electric cars to be more affordable. That price gap is coming down all the time. And this discount is there to help people to make that switch.
650 million quid this cost. And it's reported this morning that not a single electric vehicle has so far qualified for the government's £3,750 electric car grant. Leading industry leaders baffled by the scheme. The Department for Transport has announced the inclusion of 22 models in the scheme, yet all only qualify for the smaller grant of £1,500. Experts are concerned that only two models, the Citroen EC5 Aircross and the Nissan Leaf, may ever be eligible for the full grant. But here's the kicker. They're not on the market. You can't buy them. Car dealers have branded the rollout as shambolic and accused the scheme of doing more damage than good. Ginny Buckley is founder and CEO of electrifying.com, an electric car buying and advice website. So, Ginny, this scheme, 650 million quid, set up to reduce the cost of some electric vehicles. Why isn't it working? Morning to you.
Good morning, Tom. Well, why isn't it working? What a good question. And I think the answer to that would be that the government didn't have a list of which cars were eligible before it announced this scheme. And it really begs the question, why weren't those details nailed down before such a headline-grabbing announcement was put out?
So the scheme was, as I say, 650 million quid, and you could get different amounts off different cars depending on their costs. Is that right?
Yeah. The scheme was, there's a pot of £650 million. It was a discount up to £3,750. We didn't know which cars would get what kind of discount. On the day it came out, I really welcomed it. I thought it was fantastic news. We know that private buyers, you know, need to have more support to get into an EV. At the moment, there's lots of tax breaks for business buyers, for company car drivers. We did a survey last year of over 10,000 drivers with the AA. 76% told us upfront costs were an issue. So we thought it was great. We, on our figures, around half of the cars on sale should have qualified, which was brilliant news. Of course, the devil is in the detail, Tom, as always, isn't it? And as the detail has rolled out over the past few weeks, the reality is far less impressive. And as you say, at the moment, just 22 cars qualifying for that lower level grant, which is £1,500. Not a single car you can buy today gets the full amount.
And you say that you have seen now EV potential buyers sit on their hands waiting for these grants to kick in but without any information.
Yeah, I think this has been the problem, is dealers don't have information. So if you're in the market for a new car, you're about to buy your car from a dealer and you see all these press headlines, well, I might get £3,750 off, I'll go and talk to the dealer. So we have spoken to dealers who have said we've had people coming in asking for a big discount that we can't give them, because not even the manufacturers know whether their cars are eligible yet. We know that people have been cancelling orders. We know that people are putting the brakes on making an order. Because you would, wouldn't you, if you felt that any day now you may find out the car you want is eligible for a discount. And I just think, listen, I welcome the scheme, of course. I actually think that the big issue here has been that it just wasn't thought out properly before it was announced.
Ginny, appreciate it. Thank you very much indeed. Ginny Buckley is founder and CEO of Electrifying.com, an electric car buying and advice website. The Department for Transport saying the list of eligible models is published online and regularly updated with discounts available for public at dealerships. We've also published comprehensive guidance for manufacturers whom we continue to work with alongside dealers to help more of their customers access the grant. Here's the thing, folks. £650 million is a good chunk of change. More than half a billion pounds is being spent to give money off what are pretty expensive vehicles anyway. And these are only new cars. You can't get money off for a second-hand electric car. It is only new ones, up to the value of, I think, about £37,000. Who among us has 30-odd grand lying around to buy an all-new electric vehicle? So this is 650 million quid that is going to subsidise the cost of a new car for the already pretty well-off. Why are they bothering? They say, even in their own press release about this, they say, actually, the electric car market in this country is going pretty well. We're doing well compared to European countries. People are buying them. They're liking them. How they're doing it, don't know, but they're doing. Why is state money, public money, going to give money off to the expensive cars owned by the upwardly mobile, financially liquid upper middle classes? I don't understand why that's a good way of spending money. Do you? 03456060973. Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Coming up.
It looks as if stamp duty could be in the Chancellor's crosshairs, but Rachel Reeves will still try and raise new money from people's property. I'm Christian May from City AM, and I'll be discussing this and the rest of the day's business stories with Tom shortly.
Details after the 7:31 news headlines now. Dominic Ellis.
President Trump says he's called Vladimir Putin to start work on a summit with Vladimir Zelensky. It follows yesterday's meeting between the US President, Mr. Zelensky, and European leaders in Washington. Israel has yet to officially respond to a new plan by mediators for a ceasefire in Gaza. Hamas has reportedly accepted the proposal, which would involve the release of Israeli hostages during a 60-day truce. And US prosecutors say a woman has admitted supplying the drug ketamine that contributed to the death of the Friends actor Matthew Perry. Officials said Jasveen Sanger will plead guilty to five charges linked to his death in 2023. LBC weather, cloudy across much of the UK, sunny spells developing for Wales, the southeast of England and far west of Scotland, heavy rain in the south, highs of 25 degrees.
This is LBC.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future, with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line, already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
At EDF, we don't just encourage you to use less electricity. We actually reward you for it. That's why when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power. Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week, subject to fair usage. For all T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips for the football?
Your best bet is to head over to BetVictor. They're giving new customers a terrific welcome offer. If you bet a minimum of £10, they'll give you £30 in free bets.
Phew, that's a steal of a deal.
It's a good darn deal that'll make you squeal for real. Neil.
My name's not Neil.
I know, but it rhymes.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on the football at BetVictor. 18 plus, opt in and bet on any football marketing at odds of evens or greater. No cash out, 7-day expiry. Terms and conditions apply. Gambleaware.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Text 84850.
7:33 is the time. Here's Sarah on WhatsApp this morning. Tom, I feel that the government need to put all of those millions into building the infrastructures to support electric cars, such as charging stations, as frequent on the roads as petrol stations. Even if I could afford an EV, I wouldn't bother, as I perceive the hassle of charging away from home too much of a problem, suggests Sarah. Well, I just, you know, they put 650 million quid into this thing. Nothing seems to have a grant on it, or certainly not a grant of very much coming off it. They're already expensive. There aren't that many cars available. What's the point? What is that the best way of spending that money? We'll speak to a minister in a few moments' time. Let's get a business update first this morning. Christian Mayers, editor-in-chief of City AM, joins us live from some palatial dwelling, no doubt, Christian, which may well now see stamp duty removed from it. This is the front page of The Guardian. Rachel Reeves looks at property tax to replace stamp duty. Your thoughts?
If my place was truly palatial, Tom, I'd be facing fresh taxes under these plans. Let's back up a moment. Stamp duty. It is described as Britain's most hated tax. I think almost everybody who looks at it and thinks about it, let alone people who pay it, agree that it's deeply damaging. It changes behaviour. It's basically theft. Well, I think you're right. I mean, some people would say that all tax is theft, but that's the debate for another day. It prevents people from moving. It prevents people buying their first home. It prevents people downsizing. It's a nightmare of a tax. And everybody from the IMF to the Institute for Fiscal Studies said it's a disastrous tax. Okay, so it is. Then you start to diverge. People say, well, what do you replace it with? At the moment, it raises billions of pounds for the government and this government, who need a few billion more. So, yes, they are talking, according to reports that first emerged in The Guardian yesterday, about scrapping stamp duty. But hold your horses, because they will replace it with something that raises the same amount, if not more, money. And this is where the debate starts to get a little complicated. One of the proposals that the Treasury is apparently considering under Rachel Reeves' instructions is to scrap council tax and replace it with proportional property value taxes, a percentage of the value of the home. And that's been something which people have been proposing, almost a form of land tax as opposed to outdated council taxes, for some time. The other one that then comes in is the idea that's being discussed of a annual levy on properties worth over £500,000. Now, average price in the UK, house price, is about £270,000 or something, unless you are in London and other parts of the South East, where the average property price is over £500,000. So this is already being talked about as a mansion tax. It's being talked about as a wealth tax from a government that said they won't introduce a wealth tax. It's complicated stuff, but there is no way that whatever emerges is going to end up netting the Treasury less money than the current system. So my worry is whether this is a sensible and long overdue reform, or a way in which the government is going to try and raise a bit more money, even if it does that over a longer period of time. Yeah.
So there are two things really on there. There's the council tax reformation bit, and then there's the stamp duty bit. It is crazy that there are properties in a terrace in Barnsley that pay more council tax than mansions in Kensington. That is obviously crazy and needs review. But from The Guardian's reporting here, the bit on stamp duty would mean that on owner-occupied homes, you'd be paying a national property tax. Who judges the value of the home, though, if it's not sold?
That would be the government. There are all sorts of complicated ways that the government's going to have to look at this, to take into account property price increases, of course. And indeed, they might have to take into account property price decreases. But this particular part of the proposals, as it currently is understood, would certainly impact those in London and those in other parts of the country, or those in properties that are over £500,000. And it would be a chunky tax annually under some proposals for those homeowners to pay.
I guess it also, I mean, I don't own all of my house. The bank owns the vast majority of my house. There'll be plenty of people listening who are mortgaged up to their eyeballs, and yet they're going to be charged a tax on something they don't actually own, and so are therefore not wealthy from it.
Well, that's a really good point. One of the proposals under discussion is that this tax, if it comes into being, would be levied on the proportion of the value north of £500,000 rather than the whole property if it happens to be worth more than £500,000. But as I say, you do get into pretty complicated calculations. One of the concerns that people have been raising to me when we spoke to them yesterday in the property industry is that if a house price, if a house worth more than £500,000 is going to be subject to a stonking great tax, and also, by the way, possible consideration that there will still be a big tax when you sell that house or buy that house, those prices are going to skyrocket as people start trying to compensate for the fact that they're going to be clobbered once they sell it. So there are all sorts of, you know, with every tax, there are behavioural implications, unintended consequences. The main consequence the government's looking for in this one is to raise more money.
We'll speak to a minister in a bit and maybe get some flesh on the bones, although I wouldn't hold your breath. On pensions, which are another huge cost to the state, we could be about to see the pension age put up to 70, we're told.
Yeah, I mean, I think about to might be a little bit of a stretch. it all depends on your time frame, I suppose. State pension is going to rise to 67 from next year, and it will rise again to 68 sometime between 2044 and 46. I'll doubtless still be doing these little business hits in 2024, 44. there is now a review underway, an expert drafted in by the Work and Pension Secretary to consider what the next rise might be.
Yep.
And it's possible that by the 2050s, even 60s, if we can conceive of such a time that far away, it might rise up to 70. This is always deeply contentious. Governments hate talking about this. They hate touching this electrified policy area because people get terribly jumpy about it, even if you're talking about these incremental changes over the course of decades. There are countries around the world, and indeed in Europe, that adjust state pension age in line automatically with changes to life expectancy. Denmark is one of those countries. But that's quite interesting because life expectancy has actually dropped in the UK.
It has a bit.
So they'd have to take that into account. Anyway, it is a debate that needs to be had. I think the government's pension liabilities, public and state pension liabilities, is about £5 trillion. So this is something which, listen, I'm not expecting to receive a state pension, whether I hit 67 or 70. And I'm sure the government will have to take that into account as well.
I think that's probably very wise. Christian, thank you very much indeed. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. Louise is in Shots. You want to talk about electric vehicles. Hi, Louise.
Oh, good morning, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Very, very welcome.
I was just listening to the conversation that's been had, and I wanted to kind of put forward like another side that I don't think I've heard talked about. So the electric vehicles might be very expensive to buy up front and only available to a select few, fine. But once you've got the thing, the cost of insuring it is eye-watering. And also, like, full disclosure, I don't own an electric vehicle.
Right.
But my car insurance costs have gone through the roof. And the rationale that was given by my insurer is that there's more electric vehicles on the road, so therefore the chances of me literally bumping into one are all that higher. And then obviously
Why?
The cost of repair are right.
Because, I got you. So because the cost of repairing an electric vehicle is very high,
yes,
more of them means you're more likely to hit one, so the cost to you of your insurance goes up.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, so I don't have an electric vehicle and my costs have gone through the roof. I daren't even imagine what the costs of insuring an electric vehicle are.
Do you think it's a good use of your hard-earned taxpayers' money to fund a grant on electric vehicles? New ones?
Good question. Yes, I think, No, well, hold on a minute, right? So big picture, right? Do we need to kind of find more sustainable, environmentally friendly, although you could argue the point about electric vehicles, mm-hmm. methods of transport? Yes. Is this maybe the right way to do it? Probably not.
I agree. I don't know that this... It was going fine anyway, the electric car market, we're told. Louise, I've got to leave it there. Thank you very much indeed. 7:42, next.
Was not the intention from the brand. It was just maybe some uncareful decision made by the photographer who didn't really understand China.
The Swiss watchmaker Swatch has been forced to apologise and withdraw an advert featuring an Asian model pulling up the corners of his eyes. Following widespread condemnation, the company faced a fierce backlash on Chinese social media over the weekend, as users said the advert mimicked the slanted eye pose, regarded as a racist taunt about Asian eyes, and called for a boycott of Swatch products. Lee Taylor is founder and CEO of Uncommon Sense, a marketing agency. Thank you for coming on the programme, Lee. Would you think an advert like this was a good idea to put out?
Well, Not really, no. It does appear that the brand and the advertising agency have not quite understood the Chinese market, and looks like they're exposed about 25% to the Chinese market. So it does look like it's the wrong decision. But that being said, is they've done the usual, is they've pulled the ad and they've called it that there's a misunderstanding. And this is just, again, you know, it's exactly the same as the Bud Light. It's exactly the same as the Gillette. If you're going to go and offend half of your, or more than half of your target market, then you're going to have to expect a little bit of a backlash. But I do think that advertising needs to be a bit edgy. Advertising does need to start to push the boundaries. At the moment, we just seem to have this quagmire of average, low-performing, bland adverts across TV, or across just general advertising, and they're not really doing anything. They're not really doing anything for the brand, and they're not really doing anything for the consumer. So it was a little bit culturally insensitive, and it was a little bit of a bad decision based on the advertising agency. But they've just gone ahead and pulled it again, and I think, you know, stand by it. If you've done an advert, stand by the advert and make a call to your consumer and say, no, this is what it's about, rather than going ahead and pulling it.
I'm going to be deeply cynical here. Is this a tactic? We've seen it slightly with the Sydney Sweeney jeans thing in America. It's done very well for that business. I think it's American Eagle that put Sydney Sweeney on, and there was a lot of rows about that, and here's another. It gets you talked about.
It does. It might very well be a tactic. I would have said that it's not. They're not quite the appetite for risk for brands and for agencies is so low that I don't think that they're going to have done this for a tactic. I think that they've just, the agency or the brand have just made a wrong decision, and they've made a wrong call, and now they're all backtracking on it, and that's a pull it. I don't think it's a tactic. I don't think the Sydney Sweeney one was either. I think that they knew exactly what they were doing.
Yes,
and
too, yeah.
they knew that the landscape's changed, certainly in America, for the appetite for advertising. And I think that they do knew exactly what they were doing, and it worked.
Lee, appreciate it. Lee Taylor, founder and CEO of Uncommon Sense, a marketing agency. The Sydney Sweeney ad, I think, is absolutely fine. Don't see the problem. Oh, God, all these people, oh, no. She's got great jeans. It's a sort of ethno-nationalism. Oh, come on. She's selling a pair of denim jeans. Don't worry about it. This one, though, you've got an Asian guy advertising a watch, and he's pulling his eyes and doing that, you know. And that's so clearly a ridiculous thing to do. Why on earth, who didn't clock that when they were trying to sell the watches? 0345 6060 973 is the number. Coming up.
I think it's appalling, to be quite honest with you, particularly if you're standing at the bar and you're self-serving it virtually. Just don't think it's on.
We risk losing the great tradition in this country of pubs, alehouses and inns. It's a very difficult time in the hospitality sector, but I tell you what, if you're starting to charge people extra for going to the bar to order their pints and their gins and tonics, then you've got to expect some backlash. Our reporter's been sent to one London pub that is doing exactly that, hopefully to remonstrate with them. We'll get the details. 7:46, news headlines now. Dominic Ellis.
President Trump says he's called Russia's Vladimir Putin to start work on a summit with Ukraine's Vladimir Zelensky. Israel has yet to officially respond to a new plan by mediators for a ceasefire in Gaza. And the Children's Commissioner for England says children as young as six are being exposed to online pornography. LBC weather cloudy across much of the UK, sunny spells developing for Wales, the southeast of England and far west of Scotland. Some rain in the south, highs of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M1 traffic was being held southbound at Junction 10 at Luton Airport. It has just reopened, but it's still very slow. The M4's also very busy westbound from Junction 89 at Maidenhead to 10 at the A329M. And that's where our car's broken down. On the North Circular Road, there are queues both ways to Arnos Grove. It's following an accident. In Enfield, it's very busy on Mollison Avenue in both directions. This is just south of the M25 at the Hartford Road. So it's very busy both ways. The A13 remains slow westbound to the Lakeside turnoff, and that's after that car broke down earlier. Southern trains remain suspended between Hastings and Ashford International, and that's all down to a track problem.
This is LBC.
Build your own package with TUI. Let's go. City break or a beach escape. Lovely. Fly from your local airport.
Taxi's here.
Handy. Any day of the week. Ideal. On a TUI flight or a partner airline.
This is your captain speaking.
Nice. How many nights? 3? 5? 14? Perfect. More options, more choice. All wrapped up with a TUI smile. TUI, live happy. Atoll and Abtu protected. Booking T's and C's apply.
This is LBC.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, drop up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
As a small business owner, you've got to be ready for the ups and the downs. Ready to think on your feet, ready to be rushed off your feet, ready to make the big decisions and make the tea. 2 sugars in mind? Ta. Ready to be there for your customers whenever they need you. Well, ditto. Virgin Media Broadband's ready for anything business can throw at it. Yeah, it's business ready broadband. Search Virgin Media Business Broadband.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
Tesco Finest Sugar Bell Tomatoes, the ultimate supporting act. Zinging up salads or elevating fresh linguine. Perfect for when you want to be vined and dined. It's why only the finest varieties are hand-picked when perfectly ripe to ensure our Sugar Bell tomatoes are exceptionally sweet. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10 to 8 the time. Now, you can talk tax and spend all you like. And I know that you want to on a Tuesday morning, a slightly drab Tuesday, August morning. But at some stage, you've got to grow the economy. That is what Labour is hoping to do with a £500 million worth of funding. That is injected, they say, to unblock the planning system, helping to deliver 1.5 million homes to boost the economy and do more for nature under their plan for change. Torsten Bell is the pensions minister and Labour MP for Swansea West. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme. What is this money designed to do? Good morning to you.
Good morning to you, and it's lovely to be with you. Well, look, the bigger picture here is that we've got to be a country that starts building again, that starts investing in our own future. That's true when it comes to housing, but it's also true when it comes to infrastructure projects, whether that's energy systems or it's to do with water or transport projects. We just got to be able to build things. Yes, we need to have environmental protections that make sure that the quality of our nature is improving over time. But what we can't have is the way we implement those regulations getting in the way of projects being built. And that's what we're setting out today. Changes about how we implement environmental regulations to make sure that they are improving nature, not blocking development.
So what's this 500 million quid for?
Right, so it's covering two things in particular, pump priming the Nature Restoration Fund, which is the fund that you've talked on your programme about before. This is about making sure that developers can put money into that fund to improve environmental improvements in areas that aren't necessarily the same area that's going ahead with development, to make sure that we don't hold up projects by insisting that environmental improvements have to happen in exactly the same place as the actual development. And then secondly, it's about putting in place more and better planners inside the arm's length bodies that support the Environment Department in making sure that developers and local authorities get better and quicker advice on how they manage environmental regulation, so they know how to improve nature, not keep getting told pass between different regulators all the time, but not actually getting on with building.
You say the Lower Thames Crossing will be the first major infrastructure project to have a single environmental lead. How many did they have?
Well, you can have up there. I mean, the answer is lots, but there are three large environmental regulators: Natural England, the Environment Agency, and our Marine Agency as well. What we're saying here is that we've got to bring to an end the merry-go-round you can have for some large projects, where one environmental regulator tells a developer to do one set of things, and then they then bounce to a second regulator who may have comments on exactly the same thing. I'll give you a really concrete example. We've had projects where Natural England has told a developer to put in place some wetlands, They've gone ahead and started to do that, but it's meant some changes to some rivers. And at that point, the Environment Agency has got involved and said, no, you can't do that, despite what the other agency said. So instead, what we need is the regulators to get their heads together to solve that problem, rather than leaving it to the developer to try to make that all join up.
You want to build 1.5 million homes by the end of the parliament. According to Molière London, which is a residential sort of development manager, they say Angela Rayner wants 176,000 new homes built in London during 2027 and 2028. Current projections show just 9,100 private completions over that period. That's an ocean of difference. Why is that happening?
Well, we do need to see a speeding up of housing starts. You're absolutely right about that. That is true in London, just like it's true right across the country.
Why hasn't it been sped up?
There's some specific
for over a year now.
Well, we have been in for a year. You'll have watched a housing crisis develop over the course of the last three decades. What we're doing is putting in place a whole range of measures to make sure, and it takes a range of measures. There's not a silver bullet to building housing. You saw that last year when we put in place measures with mandatory housing targets for every local authority in the country to make sure that building is actually taking place, that councils can't just block building in their local areas. You're seeing it taking place with announcements we're making today to make sure that environmental regulations improve nature but don't block development. You're seeing it in terms of the capital investment we're putting in place. Mm-hmm. Remember, this government has put in place the highest level of capital investment, public capital investment, that's been sustained in Britain since the 1970s. Okay, it's double the level. Yeah. It's double the level. Yeah, I'll come to that in a second. But it's double the level put in place under the last Labour government.
Let me ask you about pensions, given you are the pensions minister. There's news around today. The state pension age could rise to 70. As life expectancy changes, there's going to be an extraordinary number of pensioners in the next 50 years. A quarter of adults in Britain are going to be pensioners in the next 50 years. Tell me again, Minister, that the triple lock of some £15 billion a year on the state pension is affordable.
We will be maintaining the triple lock through this parliament. We've made that commitment. That is important. It will mean guaranteed increases in living standards for pensioners. That could be up to £1,900 on current forecast for a pensioner who's receiving the full new state pension, £1,500 for one receiving the basic state pension. That is an important part of what our support for pensioners. Actually, our two big support for pensioners are uprating the state pension, making sure that bedrock of support for pensioners is there, but then also making sure we're saving the NHS, because the real betrayal of older generations in Britain today is the state of the health service that they in particular rely on.
Do you think the state pension age is going to get to 70?
No, I don't think you're about to see that in the near term. What you can see is plans to increase. Well, I'm just about to explain to you.
Thank you.
So what you're seeing is increase in the state pension age to 67 over the course of the next, from 2026 to 2028. Mm-hmm. You'll know there's an independent review underway as the 2014 Act put in place by the coalition government requires our government to do. We have to put that independent review. No, I mean, look, the government has to put a final response in by 2029, so we need to commission the inputs to that in advance. That's what we're doing. It's exactly the normal process.
And if that says state pension age needs to go up faster than it currently is, will you take that recommendation on?
Well, that's not how the process works. They provide a set of information. You raised some of the important issues that need to be considered. Longevity, exactly as you say, is an important issue. I mean, one of the sad bits of news over the last 15 years is that we haven't seen the increases in longevity that we were used to, particularly for poorer areas. We haven't seen them over the last 15 years in a way that we were seeing them in the previous decade. So that's what I mean by that you need to think about this in the round. We need to make sure we've got a health service and a healthier country. Yes, we need to have a sustainable set of public finances. That includes decisions on the state pension. That's why you're seeing
means testing. Do you ever see a time when the state pension is means tested?
Well, absolutely not. That's a mad idea. The only person that suggested that is Kemi Badenoch. It's a lunacy.
You don't think that it's people who have the 500,000 pensioners who pay the top rate of tax that they also deserve to get the state pension too?
Yeah, but look, let me explain why that needs to be the case, because if you want to have a clear system where people know that they receive the basics of the state pension in retirement, but know that they then do need to take responsibility of saving more for their own retirement, that's what automatic enrolment is like. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you're putting into a private pension.
Oh, I am, and you're coming for it.
Wait, I'm not coming for it. That's a ridiculous thing.
You're going to put my private pension, whatever's left of it, maybe in the future, if I want to give that to my children, you're going to roll that into inheritance. Absolute madness.
Okay, I'll I'll come back to that in a second. But but you've asked a question about means testing. I want to explain why it's mad. And as I say, the only person I've heard suggest that is Kemi Badenoch. And the reason it's mad is because if you're going to have an incentive to save for your own private pension, you need to know that if you put a pound into your private pension, you don't have money taken out of your state pension. There needs to be a very clear incentive to save. That's what was put in place by the Turner Commission back in the 2000s. And I absolutely think that is the right approach. On the point you raise about inheritance tax and pensions, if I'm honest, I think you're talking nonsense. And the reason for that, you know, it's good to have, you know, good to have honesty, a good robust debate. But if you want to have properly funded public services, we put a lot of pension tax relief to make sure people have strong incentives to save for their retirement. You'll know about that. Again, mm-hmm. I've heard you talk about that on your programme before. It's about £70 billion a year. If we're going to do that, we need to be clear that the purpose of that is to provide a pension in retirement. What it's not there to do is to encourage financial advisers to market pensions as a way of avoiding inheritance tax. And that's what had been happening since the changes put in place by the Tories back in 2014. That was a big mistake they made, and all we're doing is reverting to the previous situation. Your pension is for your retirement. It's not a way around tax inheritance tax.
I have to ask you about the property tax story on the front page of The Guardian. Can you rule out a national property tax on homes?
Well, you know what I say on any tax policy, which is those are decisions for the chancellors and budgets. I'm not going to start speculating on tax policy
because otherwise, in the Telegraph,
there can be as many sources as you like.
Well, I'll tell you what they say. The Treasury source in the Telegraph says this isn't happening. Is that the case?
I'm not going to comment on any speculation about tax policy because I'm not going to run through the list of all taxes. You know what we have done as a government, taking decisions back in the budget last autumn. Yes, some tax decisions, you just raised one of them, which is changes on inheritance tax for pensions, but other changes, fair changes on non-DOMs, for example. And the reason those choices are important is because we need to have sustainable public finances, but we also need to start rebuilding our public services. And if we want to bring austerity to an end, it did involve some choices in the budget last autumn, and you can see what we've done.
Very good to talk to you. Thank you for coming on. Torsten Bell is the Pensions Minister and Labour MP for Swansea West. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Coming up...
In our manifesto, we committed to reforming stamp duty land tax to raise revenues while supporting those buying their first home.
Despite the Minister not commenting, the Chancellor is saying that the Treasury is considering a new tax on the sale of homes worth more than £500,000. We'll look at how that might affect you. Plus...
I think it's shocking that the cost of living as such has gone up so much that people can't even now get to kind of go out and have some form of release because they're having to pay so much.
Tough time for the pub trade, but charging people extra for ordering from the bar? We've sent our reporter to that pub in central London. And... tough times too down on Clarkson's farm, as it is for many farmers who warn of one of the worst harvests in a generation because of the weather.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, President Trump says he's called Vladimir Putin to start work on a summit with Vladimir Zelensky. It follows yesterday's meeting between the US President and Mr. Zelensky and European leaders in Washington. Mr. Trump says America will be involved in guaranteeing Ukraine security in any peace deal with Russia. French President Emmanuel Macron says it's clear a step forward has been taken.
Tous nous avons un accord, nous voulons la paix.
We all have one thing in common. We want peace. This is what unites us. We have agreed on several points that are important and that were not as clear, I must say, a few days or weeks ago.
Officials say they're hopeful that a bilateral meeting between Russia and Ukraine could happen in the next fortnight, but no date has been given. Sir Ben Wallace was the Defence Secretary when Russia invaded Ukraine. He's told Tom the talks went as well as they could have.
Trump was very careful not to rule things in and not to rule things out, which was uncharacteristic of him. But I also think, you know, we've got to a stage there where potentially there might be a summit between Putin and President Zelensky. We'll see. Nothing else has been firm. And there's quite a lot of speculation in the media about troops on the ground, etc.
Israel has yet to officially respond to a new plan by mediators for a ceasefire in Gaza. Hamas has reportedly accepted the proposal, which would involve the partial release of Israeli hostages during a 60-day truce. US prosecutors say a woman has admitted supplying the drug ketamine that contributed to the death of Matthew Perry. The Friends actor was found dead at his home in Los Angeles in October 2023. Officials say Jasveen Sanger will plead guilty to five federal charges linked to Mr. Perry's death. The Children's Commissioner for England says research by her office has found children as young as six are being exposed to online pornography. Dame Rachel D'Souza says more than half of young people have seen such material by 13, with many stumbling across it on social media. Dame Rachel says her findings are evidence of dangerous algorithms. The data was gathered prior to online age verification tools being brought in June. A new research suggests a quarter of parents in England are going without food or heating in order to afford school uniforms. Many are also buying it with buy now, pay later schemes, according to data gathered by the charity Parentkind. New rules are due to come in next year, making only three branded items compulsory. You can read the school's minister, Catherine McKinnell's exclusive reaction on LBC. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 reopened at 91.57. It closed up 18 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunny spells for Wales, the southeast of England and the far west of Scotland. Some heavy rain developing for the south later. Highs of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
The satisfaction of a perfectly installed soft close drawer. The joy of your first hot shower since the boiler was fixed. And that's the sound of another glowing customer review. Because Checkatrade approved tradespeople score on average 9 out of 10. From plumbing to roofing to electrics, download the app. Checkatrade, a job done right. Checkatrade, checkatrade.com. 9 out of 10 customer rating based on average reviews in 2024.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick.
Morning to you, 4 minutes past eight the time. Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Hope we find you very well this Tuesday morning. Coming up...
Abolish stamp duty. It's so, so terrible. And it relates primarily to stopping new houses being transacted.
Is the end nigh for the hated stamp duty tax? According to The Guardian, the Treasury is considering a new tax on the sale of homes worth more than £500,000. We'll look at the detail. Would it be fairer? Plus,
why should you pay a service charge on a pint? That makes no sense. You're paying for the pint anyway. The pint's already taxed.
What he said. Why are you being charged a tax on ordering at the bar? We'll remonstrate with the pub that is doing this in central London. And...
we need to be clear that the purpose of that is to provide a pension in retirement. What it's not there to do is to encourage financial advisers to market pensions as a way of avoiding inheritance tax.
The Telegraph suggests that the government is paving the way for the state pension age to be raised to 70 as a review considers tying future increases to life expectancy. It comes as it's revealed a quarter of Brits are going to be of pensionable age in the next 40 or so years. Can the state pension, as it currently is, survive?
Call 0345 60 60 973. Tweet at LBC. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Very good morning to you. This hour...
the Alaska summit reinforced my belief that while difficult, peace is within reach, and I believe that in a very significant step, President Putin agreed that Russia would accept security guarantees for Ukraine, and this is one of the key points that we need to consider.
It's not the main point out of this, but my word, Donald Trump knows how to attract attention. This summit that happened yesterday, unlike anything we've seen before, a wartime crisis summit, European leaders flying in at short notice to be alongside President Zelensky as he, in his new suit, went to see President Trump in the Oval Office. The conclusions seem to be that Zelensky is, he says, ready to meet with Putin, that could happen in the next 7 to 14 days, that the United States will provide military support to Ukraine in the event of a ceasefire or indeed a lasting peace. What that might look like, it's unclear. The Financial Times suggesting Ukraine will, through European financing, buy $100 billion worth of American-made arms in order to help it keep itself safe should the Russians come over the hill again. And a suggestion, too, that the relationship between Zelensky and Trump has thawed significantly. The two laughing together, pictured laughing together on the front page of many of the newspapers, arm around each other's shoulders. Much more solidarity, it would seem, between the president and the United States and the president of Ukraine. What that will end up looking like?
Maisa Gifford is a British veteran of the Ukrainian army who served for 2 years in the 131st Recon Battalion. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme, Maisa. Good to see you. First of all, talk us through your experiences on the front line, sir, in Ukraine, if you would.
Sure. I mean, this is the worst war in Europe since the Second World War. It's a brutal, bloody, violent war that's been going on for far too long. I was there for 2 years, fighting predominantly in the south, in around a city called Kherson. I fought in the open fields of the east of Ukraine as well, took part in the counterattacks after the sort of failed summer offensive of 2023. But also, I got to see Ukraine with my own eyes. I got to meet ordinary Ukrainians. I got to build relationships out there with people. And there's a truth that is often missed in all of this, and that is that Ukraine is a sovereign country on the edge of Europe. It's one that should determine its own future, that's been illegally and brutally invaded by Russia. And they're not just a pawn in the big powers game here. That's something that hopefully Trump and the others are considering when they're around that table.
As much, of course, as a lot of blood and treasure has been spilt on both sides, but certainly on the Ukrainian side in defending their territory, do you accept that there may have to be some territory ceded to Russia if it is in Russian control?
Ceded in the sense that for the sake of peace, there should be a pause in the fighting. I think the best outcome for Ukraine is a sort of North Korea-South Korea divide. No legal recognition of the territories that Russia has illegally annexed. And basically a pathway to peace, a longer-term peace, because at the moment, Putin's demands are very much like the Treaty of Versailles. They're trying to limit the size of the Ukrainian military. They're trying to seize Ukrainian territory, so much territory that it sort of will inhibit Ukraine's ability to function as a state. And that's really what they want. They want to turn Ukraine into a sort of rump state of Russia, very similar to Belarus. So at the end of the day, what we should really be focusing on now is a peace deal. If a peace deal is not possible and Putin, because the ball very much is in Putin's court, because I left after the Friday meeting, I was quite upset how nauseating the welcome was for Vladimir Putin. This is a war criminal. Mm-hmm. How Trump came out of that meeting with Putin utterly flat and completely sort of apparently broken by Putin's refusal to actually move on his position. But now, in more recent days, we've started to see Europe and America coming together in a way that it hasn't done in a very long time. And we're starting to talk about security guarantees. So now the ball is back into Russia's court. And I think that's very much that's thanks to Britain, France, etc., really pushing the diplomatic line. So hopefully there is a path to peace here. But if there's not, we should also be considering more sanctions for Russia, because that's something that was on the table before. And hopefully Putin hasn't outmaneuvered Trump and got it off the table.
Good to talk to you. Good to see you again. Maisa Gifford, British veteran of the Ukrainian army, served for 2 years in the 131st Recon Battalion. 11 past eight, Karen von Hippel is a former Director General of RUSI, the Royal United Services Institute, and now Chair of Defence Practice at Arden Strategies. Thank you for coming on. To pick up on Mace's notion there of a sort of demilitarised zone akin to North and South Korea, do you see that as an option? And if so, who would police or patrol it? Morning to you.
Well, yeah, good morning, Tom. And I think I agree with him. That's a long term, what we would like, what everyone would like. Getting there is still... there's still a lot of work to do. And part of the challenge now will be what kind of military arrangement, what kind of deterrence force is what the Europeans have been mostly promoting with American backstopping it. What would that look like? Because, of course, we saw in Alaska, Putin doesn't want any NATO troops nearby. And so even getting there is going to be difficult. I gather that the CDS, UK CDS, and other military chiefs will be in D.C. to talk about that with America this week, really keeping
staff,
the ball rolling.
CDS, yeah.
Yeah, Chief of the Defense Staff and other military chiefs are going to be in D.C. meeting with the Americans to talk about what is in the art of the possible, not just 100 million you mentioned, 100 billion, that Ukraine would essentially purchase via European economies, which is already a huge challenge, but also what kind of support America will provide. you know, hopefully America will provide that backstopping. It's needed if this peace is going to be implemented. But we're very far from that.
Just to linger on that for a second, because, again, in the slew of stuff that came out from yesterday, this might bypass people. But the idea is reported by the Financial Times that Europe is going to pay $100 billion on Ukraine's behalf to purchase American weapons to help Ukraine protect itself. It's astonishing for a number of reasons. One, that's a lot of money. Tough times in Europe financially, that's a bit tricky. Secondly, that the Americans wouldn't say, of course you can have half off, or it's buy one, get one free, or whatever, because you're an ally and we want to help you. That's also as transactional as Trump gets, really.
Yeah, but I wouldn't dwell too much on that. There's no time limit on that. It's very likely that the Europeans can say, yes, yes, of course, we'll do that. And then, you know, we'll do that over 10 years. And then by the time they're ready to pay the bill, the next U.S. administration could say, well, look, that's our contribution. So I wouldn't dwell too much on that, actually. And I think it's, you know, it's better than what was happening before when Trump was just promising to cut everything off, right? And the Ukrainians really need that to get to the next stage of any peace deal.
Do you think we are therefore now closer to having British troops in some capacity, under what badge, don't know, uniformed how, don't know, but British troops in Ukraine providing Ukrainian security?
That's not clear if they will be inside Ukraine or in the area around Ukraine. I think initially when this was discussed a few months ago, the Europeans could only come up with 20,000 soldiers, which wouldn't be enough to deploy inside Ukraine. So there could be some sort of deterrence force in the countries around. But I think let's just see what happens over the next week and what kind of commitments the Americans are willing to make on paper if the Europeans can muster up more troops. At the moment, they haven't been able to muster up too many. And so that's going to be one of the many challenges that we're going to face. Not to mention, will we even have a Putin-Zelensky meeting, right? I mean, that's still not clear that's going to happen. The Russians are hedging around that commitment already, even though Trump has made that on Putin's behalf.
What did you make of the relationship, the reaction, the body language between Zelensky and Trump yesterday, finally, Karen?
Yeah, so I was actually relieved when I saw him coming out of the meeting, walking next to Trump. He didn't look dejected. He looked pretty quietly happy, and I thought that was great. I thought it was very clever when he passed that letter from his wife for Melania about the children. I think Melania has actually played an important role in all this because, of course, being Slovenian, she knows what the Russians are like. And so quietly behind the scenes, she was probably eating away at Trump's love for Putin over the years. So I think she has played an important role. I thought that was quite interesting that he did that at the start. So let's see. I'm not super optimistic, but I'm maybe one level below cautiously optimistic.
Very good to talk to you. Thanks for coming on. Karen von Hippel is former Director General of the Royal United Services Institute. It does feel like we're closer to this coming to an end. In what form, don't know, and the end of this war could precipitate the potential for another one, as Sir Ben Wallace, the former Defence Secretary, was pointing out earlier. But that's a good thing, isn't it? It's a good thing that we're nearer the end of this. The years and years of this conflict that seems intractable and impossible to bring to a conclusion now, and to be fair to him, I know you don't like him, there's lots of reasons why, lots of good reasons why you wouldn't like him, but Trump has brought this about, hasn't he? I mean, sort of force of personality has dragged everybody together, even if it's a force of personality that's meant the European leader's gone, oh my God, what's he doing? What's he saying? We'd better get over there and try and whisper to him. Clearly, someone has been whispering to Zelensky to say, listen, think you might need to put a suit on this time and actually maybe just keep it quiet when you're in the Oval Office and talk to him afterwards. You know, how to play to Trump has definitely had an effect on Zelensky. I think that's what you saw from the warmth that there was throughout the course of that Oval Office press conference. Does Trump deserve any credit? 03456060973. Coming up,
we need to have sustainable public finances, but we also need to start rebuilding our public services. And if we want to bring austerity to an end, it did involve some choices in the budget last autumn, and you can see what we've done.
It's one of the most hated taxes on the books. The Treasury, though, considering a new tax on the sale of homes, possibly to replace stamp duty. We'll get into the details of that after the 8:17 news headlines with Dominic Ellis.
Donald Trump says he's spoken to Vladimir Putin to start arrangements for a summit between the Russian and Ukrainian leaders. Hamas has reportedly accepted a plan for a 60-day ceasefire in Gaza in exchange for the partial release of some Israeli hostages. And charity-commissioned analysis of social media posts suggests that teenagers are seeing a higher rate of self-harm material than they were 2 years ago. LBC weather, sunny spells for Wales, the southeast of England and the far west of Scotland. Some rain in the south, highs of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. In Staffordshire, there are delays on the M6 northbound heading up towards Junction 15 at Stoke-on-Trent, and that was after a car broke down earlier. Has been recovered, but it's still very slow. The M4 in Berkshire remains very busy westbound at Junction 89 at Maidenhead, and that's because a car has broken down. In London, there are delays on the North Circular Road in two places. Firstly, it's slow both ways at Arnos Grove, and that's because of an accident. And westbound to Walthamstow, it's extremely busy because of an accident at the Crooked Billet interchange. Those delays stretch all the way back to Waterworks Corner. Also, there are problems on the trains. Elizabeth Line services are suffering with severe delays to and from Heathrow.
This is LBC.
As it's free to sell in your local area on eBay, I was thinking maybe I should sell that bench press. Oh, that's literally been benched. And this guitar that I've forgotten how to play. Oh, must be the buyer for the chest of drawers I listed yesterday. And I'm still in my pyjamas. Be with you in a sec.
With new listing features, it's easy to sell for free in your local area on eBay. Download the app now. eBay. Things people love. T's and C's apply. Excludes vehicles.
This is LBC.
Listeners, we interrupt the airwaves to share an incredible discovery. The reason why Britain hasn't been so great of late is because the country hasn't been eating enough Weetabix. We must get to work in rebuilding Great Britain, Bix by Bix. By delivering Weetabix to whoever plans the traffic diversions, to delivery drivers who can't seem to find your house, and people who don't stack the dishwasher properly. To Britain, we must say, have you had your Weetabix?
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
Book a free hearing test today at bootshearingcare.com and save up to £300 with our free technology upgrade. Boots, with you for life. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, top up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P.
Do the four trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
8:20 the time, Tom Swarbrick here on LBC. We'll talk more about the difficulties that farmers are having in producing the veg that we all like to buy off the supermarket shelves. They're warning not just of shortages of some veg, but a shrinking of it, particularly broccoli. It's because of the weather. I don't know if you've seen Clarkson's farm. It is fantastic. I watch it to relax, you know. It's nice to watch this guy being, you know, having his life fall apart around him in some respect, such as the difficulty of being a farmer. But it's a beautifully shot piece of television. But it's very, very difficult being a farmer at the best of times, let alone when the weather is against you. So we'll get into the details of that. We'll talk about the pub. Again, another area of the economy that is on Struggle Street. The hospitality sector really struggling at the moment. Pubs need to do everything they can to try and keep the doors open. Although putting a 4% charge on ordering at the bar seems a little on the nose. We sent our reporter to that particular pub in central London to see what the patrons make of it. Very keen to get your thoughts on what you saw and heard yesterday at the Trump, Zelensky and others meeting. On the and others, John from Hartlepool says, Tom, you give Trump credit he doesn't deserve. All he does is repeat what Putin's just told him. His former aides say that he doesn't read his briefings and believes what the last person said. Yesterday, he was acting like Starmer, Mertz and Macron were contestants on The Apprentice. He looked disinterested in what they said. Compare that to how he acts with Putin. The sooner the media stop pretending Trump is a functional and credible president, the better. Well, yes, okay, but he is president. And he is saying, well, no, actually, Zelensky is saying he is ready to talk to Putin.
that's, is that not a better thing than Zelensky not being ready to talk to Putin, or them not speaking at all, or there being no effort made to try and find some solution to this problem, where thousands, tens of thousands of people are dying, a huge amount of money is being spent? There's got to be a way to bring this to a conclusion. It's just got to be a conclusion that takes Europe and Ukraine into mind. It can't obviously just be the conclusion that Putin wants. And that has been the worry, it's fair to say, John. That has been the worry with some of what Trump has been saying. 03456060973 is the number. Come back to that in just a few moments. Next.
In our manifesto, we committed to reforming stamp duty land tax to raise revenues while supporting those buying their first home.
Front page of a number of other newspapers this morning. The Treasury considering a new tax on the sale of homes worth more than £500,000 as a step towards a radical overhaul of stamp duty and council tax. As the Chancellor Rachel Reeves prepares the ground, this is The Guardian, Chancellor prepares the ground for tax rises in the autumn budget, senior ministers have tasked officials to study how a proportional property tax could be implemented. Officials are initially examining a potential national property tax, which would replace stamp duty on owner-occupied homes. They're also studying whether, after the national tax, a local property tax could then replace council tax in the medium term in an effort to repair battered local authority finances. So, changes are afoot. Let's start with stamp duty. Freddie Poser is the director of Priced Out, an organisation that campaigns for affordable house prices. What do you feel is the effect, Freddie, on the affordability of those homes of having something like stamp duty? Hi.
Hi. Stamp duty is sort of one of the worst taxes we have on the book. It's really bad for the property market. It gums up. It makes it much harder to move. It makes the labour market less dynamic. And it's heartening to see the Chancellor look at replacing it, because if you can get this right, there are all sorts of positive effects that beyond affordability that a property tax can make. It's in a direct property tax replacement for stamp duty that raises the same amount of revenue won't necessarily make homes more affordable, though right. One of the advantages for first-time buyers is you can't borrow against the stamp duty portion of your home purchase in your mortgage. So one small advantage is that what would have been the stamp duty portion is folded into your total yep. principal in borrowing. But the real advantage here is about encouraging better use of the existing properties we have and making it easier for people to move homes, to move around the country for jobs, yes. that sort of thing.
So one of the things they say is gumming up the market is the prospect of having to pay stamp duty. It means that a lot of people who live in bigger homes don't downsize regularly or as quickly as they would like because of stamp duty. So talk us through. So I have a house worth £550,000. How, in theory, would this new tax, from what you've read and seen of it and heard about it, this direct property tax, how would that work? How would it affect me?
Well, so that's the thing. We don't know any of the details at the moment. Because it's just sort of a briefing from officials in the Treasury. But some of the proposals involve either taxing you a small amount on that whole value. So there you might be paying a few thousand pounds a year, or quite a few thousand pounds a year, on that £550,000. And others have looked at, for example, only taxing annually the proportional property tax element on all of your value over £500,000, and keeping something like a stamp duty on the lower value on that £500,000.
I see.
So there are lots of proposals in the works. One of the things the Chancellor will have to look at is, you know, how do you reform property taxes whilst also what she needs to do at the budget is raise revenue? So that she's not just trying to say, okay, well, we just need to replace stamp duty and we've got 10 years to do it. She needs to get some more money coming in from October, sorry.
It would be very unfair, wouldn't it, if I've got a mortgage on a property worth £550,000 that's more than half of the value of the property, and I am nevertheless told that I have to pay a charge per year on the value of the whole thing. Because even if I were to sell it, the majority of the money would go to the bank. It's not mine.
Well, so a property tax, generally, you consider it a bit like you're being taxed on the value of property you are consuming. Doesn't matter who's paying for it. If you were renting it, you would assume that... Yep. Well,
this is owner-occupied homes, apparently.
Yeah, so this is the thing. A normal a property tax in the States, for example, would apply to all residential property. So what we don't know is... would in the UK you only do it for owner-occupier homes, but in theory you're paying a tax on the value of the property you're consuming, and it doesn't matter who owns it, someone has to pay the tax.
I mean, there's a lot to discuss. Freddie, thank you very much indeed. Freddie Poses, Director of Priced Out, an organisation that campaigns for affordable house prices. You must have been stung for stamp duty. It's agony. It's absolute agony. Is it 300 years old or more than 300 years old, this particular tax, originally brought in by the king to help fund an army to fight the French? I mean, it is time that this thing is reviewed, isn't it? I mean, come on. I just don't know how you can constitute it so it inevitably brings in a bit more money, because it has to increase money because Rachel Reeves needs it. But also it does seem fairer that properties that are worth more have to pay more than properties that are worth less. That seems, on the face of it, a lot fairer, doesn't it? Liv is in Westminster. Liv.
Good morning. Hello.
Hello. Your thoughts?
Well, it was just that we took out a new lease on a commercial business premises in West One, Westminster. And total surprise, but we were also stung with stamp duty because we had a 10-year lease and it was over a certain value. But I had no idea that, having gone through that process, that we would actually then have to be paying stamp duty on a rental.
How much did you pay?
Well, a fair few thousand, because I think it comes in at a certain levy if your rent or your property rental value is over a certain threshold, and it's a 10-year lease. But it was, as I say, a total surprise after signing the lease that we then got told by a solicitor, oh, we've just found out you're eligible to have to pay stamp duty.
Can I try something out on you, Liv? And please, you know, don't tell anyone that I asked you this on the radio if anyone asks, because it might be a dumb thing. This might be a really, really stupid notion. So, again, feel free to charge at me for it. But I buy, as a private citizen, a private property from another private citizen.
Mm-hmm.
We agree a price based on market forces. Mm-hmm. I spend the money, we get it from the bank. Whatever. Two private people exchange money in order for this particular good, a house. Why does the state need to get involved? Why does it need to be anywhere near it? Leave it alone.
Yeah. It's, as I say, it's a tax on taxpayer money, isn't it? It's a change of hands. It's any opportunity there is to charge, even on the principle that we're not even buying it, we're only renting. We don't actually own.
Yeah.
We've just signed a lease.
So you're paying stamp duty on something you don't own.
Yeah, we just have to access that for business purposes, and to give us security of tenure, we decided a 10-year would work best. And then to be told, oh, by the way, actually, you have to now pay stamp duty.
Yeah, that's far from ideal. Liv, thank you very much indeed. I also note that one of the things the government says in response to this story is they say, we are committed to keeping taxes for working people as low as possible. Now, that's slightly different from the formulation that the Labour government have previously used, which is they're not going to put up taxes for working people. Now it's a question of keeping them as low as possible. Well, we know where that ends up, don't we? And I get the sense very clearly that a lot of people are now extremely fed up with just how much they are being squeezed through different forms of taxation, whether it's on their work or whether it's on their pension or whether it's on their house, whatever it is. Just seems like, who'd you do this all for? Who'd you wake up in the morning to go out and work yourself to the bone for? At the moment, it feels like you're doing it for HMRC, doesn't it? This might be the day in the year for a lot of you. This might be the first day of the year that you end up earning for yourself the money you go out to work, because it's the point at which you basically earned enough money to pay your tax bill for the year. More than halfway through. 03456060973. Coming up.
I think it's appalling, to be quite honest with you, particularly if you're standing at the bar and you're self-serving it virtually. Just don't think it's on.
If all that talk of tax is enough to make you reach for the bottle, then you might also have a headache when it comes to the 4% charge that is being put on by one pub for you actually ordering your drinks at the bar. We've sent our reporter to the pub. 8:31, news headlines, Dominic Ellis.
President Trump says he's called Vladimir Putin to start work on a summit with Vladimir Zelensky. It follows yesterday's meeting between the US President, Mr. Zelensky, and European leaders at the White House. Israel has yet to officially respond to a new plan by mediators for a ceasefire in Gaza. Hamas has reportedly accepted the proposal, which would involve the release of Israeli hostages during a 60-day truce. And charity commissioned analysis of social media posts suggests teenagers are seeing a higher rate of self-harm material than they were 2 years ago. The findings were made in advance of the Online Safety Act, which the government insists will protect children. LBC weather. Sunny spells developing for much of the UK after a cloudy start. Some heavy rain in southern England. Highs of 26 degrees.
This is LBC.
What time is it?
8 a.m. And I've already meditated, stretched and been for a big run.
How?
It's my new Samsung Galaxy Watch 8 Classic. It's got sleep tracking and bedtime guidance to remind me when to go to bed. So I always wake up early and fresh.
And you made me coffee.
That's mine.
Oh.
Buy the new Galaxy Watch 8 Classic today at Samsung.com. Requires smartphone on Android 11 or above with the latest version of the Samsung Health app. Intended for general wellness and fitness purposes only.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, tap up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
At EDF, we don't just encourage you to use less electricity. We actually reward you for it. That's why when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power. Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week, subject to fair usage. For all T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Text 84850.
8.34 is the time. We'll get the view of the leader of the Liberal Democrats, Ed Davey, on what he saw yesterday from the Trump-Putin meeting, what deal he feels Britain should be able to sign up to, if there is a deal that's ever proposed. We'll speak to Ed Davey in a few, and on other matters, I suppose, particularly on the notion of this property tax change that is being reported in the papers. On that, Andrew's in Reading. Hi, Andrew.
Hello.
Your thoughts on this, sir?
Yeah, so listening to this has made me quite angry, actually.
Sorry.
Those of us who have saved up for several years, possibly working several jobs to put in a large deposit for a large house for our families, we may now have to sell our houses to pay this annual, or to get away from this annual tax. I don't have a very large wage, neither does my wife, but we were able to get an expensive property because we worked incredibly hard and we saved incredibly hard. So it seems very unfair for those of us that are not earning mega money to have to possibly sell our homes.
But in order to sell your home, you'd have to go and live somewhere else, wouldn't you? You'd buy somewhere else, right?
Well, yes, we would.
And you'd pay stamp duty on that?
Yes, we would. But we'd get away. Either way around, you're going to be hit would be cheaper than an annual tax going forward.
Well, depends on the value of the house, I guess. I mean, I don't have the details of this muted new scheme, obviously, but I guess it would depend on the value of the property.
Well, it would, but it would mean that we would have to, let's say that it was a 500,000 threshold, yeah. We would end up having to find a property that is within the same area, because, you know, we can't just up and move our jobs. It would have to be in the same area, which is quite expensive. It would have to be of a certain number of bedrooms because we have children. So it's going to make our lives incredibly more difficult.
Forgive me, Andrew. I'm tearing through the newspapers to try and find the bit of detail I saw about. So I think one of the suggestions is that if it's a house over £500,000, you would pay something like 0.24% annually as a fee. A couple of £1,000 a year.
That's a lot of money. You know, I'm already paying over £10,000 a year for my childcare.
Yes.
Where do they think I'm going to get this extra money from?
Well, otherwise you'd have to pay stamp duty on a property that you moved to anyway. So it's just another way of dicing up the same tax, in effect, although in a way that might be a little fairer based on the value of your home.
Well, I don't think it would be fairer at all, because we've already paid stamp duty for the house that we have. They're now going to say, okay, right, you paid stamp duty, now we're going to tax you even more on the house you've already paid tax on.
Got it. I've got the solution. Got it. You just don't make it retrospective. There you go. You're fine. Sorted. You only do it on sales of new properties that people buy further down the line. If you bought your house and you're probably right, you can't then churn out another $2,500 a year just to, for the pleasure of living in the house that you bought. So we don't do it retrospectively.
That could work. If you don't have to pay the stamp duty up front and it's an annual tax going forward, that may be a workable solution. But as long as you don't end up paying more in the long run as you would have done just paying a lump sum up front.
Let's see where we get to. I mean, at the moment, there are conflicting answers to the question of, is this happening? There's a Treasury source in the Telegraph that says, definitely not. You've heard a government minister on with me saying, well, I'm not going to get into the details, so sort of not ruling it out. Well, I guess we'll have to wait to the budget. This is what the summer is for before a budget, folks. Rampant speculation about what the Chancellor is going to do. Andrew, thank you. Next.
Every year, the brewery put our prices up. Everything is going up. And if we were putting our prices up in line with what they are, it would be like 20 quid a pint, which obviously we can't do.
We will have lost a huge part of this country's tradition, history and culture if the pubs go to the wall. One pub a day is being closed, we're being told, as the hospitality sector in general struggles at the moment. If you've been into a pub in central London recently, you'll know that you struggle to get a pint, I would say, under 7 quid, which is just absolute madness. Add to which, a pub in London has now put on 4% to any drinks that customers order at the bar. This is the Well and Boot in Waterloo Station. Punters there being slapped with the automatic tariff, which applies to any food and drink, the Telegraph reports. We thought there was only one opportunity to send Fraser Knight to the pub, and it was this. He's our reporter at the Well and Boot in Waterloo Station. Fraser.
Well, Tom, first of all, I want to clarify, I'm not usually in the habit of ordering a beer at 8:30 on a Tuesday morning, but in the name of journalism and all that, I can confirm I am in the Well and Boot on the balcony of Waterloo Station. There's about 4 other customers here having coffee and breakfast and hundreds of people below streaming off the trains to work. But I have got a pint of Guinness in front of me. My receipt tells me it was £7.75. And look, as a boy from Glasgow, I will never get over London prices. But crucially, this beer is 30p more than what it says on the menu because of the discretionary 4% service charge. And that is despite the fact I ordered it at the bar. Now, in fairness, the bartender did let it settle and walked it over to the table for me. But the real question is, what do we make of this? Well, here's what some of the, shall we say, more responsible folk who don't drink before work had to say about it.
Well, it's a bit disgraceful, to be fair. Why should you pay a service charge on a pint? That makes no sense. You're paying for the pint anyway. The pint's already taxed. So basically, you're just being taxed twice now for a pint, which is unacceptable.
I think it's shocking that the cost of living as such has gone up so much that people can't even now get to kind of go out and have some form of release because they're having to pay so much.
I think it's appalling, to be quite honest with you. You know, the price of beer and alcohol generally has just shot through the roof over 5-10 years, and to suddenly add 4% for no good reason, particularly if you're standing at the bar and you're self-serving it virtually, just don't think it's on.
And of course, the price of a pint has been steadily increasing over the past few years. It's on course to be a fiver nationwide or £7 in London. And that's because, we're told, overhead and staffing costs have soared, leaving many pubs struggling to stay afloat. Sasha Lord, who's the chair of the Nighttime Industries Association, the former night czar from Manchester, he told LBC that's largely down to tax.
In 2009, the profit on a pint was 84p. This year, 2025, the profit on a pint is 12p. We're being taxed to the hilt. We had business rates discounts at 75%. That's now dropped to 40%. We've obviously got the national insurance increase, and it's devastating the industry. And especially an industry that welcomes so many young people. It might be their first job or the weekend job or a job to get them through college. That stops at the moment. There aren't jobs out there.
But this doesn't seem to be a pub that's putting its prices up, Tom. The bartender told me the service charge is a tip that goes straight to the staff. And while more places are adding 12.5% on bills where table service is included, there's a real question about whether this, adding it on at the bar, is a fair measure. Now, our questions have been directed to the pub's owners, Glendola Leisure, but alas, we haven't heard back from them.
When you asked Fraser when you bought this drink whether or not you wanted to pay this charge?
I wasn't. Right, so it was £7.75, tapped the card, and then on the receipt I saw the service charge.
So you can only you can only opt out of this if you say, I don't want to pay this 4% charge?
Yep, and you need to know it's there in the first place. The discretionary service charge is in very small writing I've found at the bottom of the menu.
Fraser, it's a good thing you can still read after your trip to the pub this morning. Thank you very much indeed. Fraser Knight, LBC's reporter at the Well and Boot in Waterloo Station. So it's not, they say it's an optional charge, but who goes to the bar? Oh, no, thank you, I don't want to. You just pay it anyway, because you're British and that's what you do. But it's a bit insidious, this, isn't it? And I'm absolutely all for, as you know, my programme at 4 o'clock on a Monday to Friday on LBC is the unofficial home of the pub. We support it, we salute it, we try and keep it going, but not like this. You can't pay an extra tax because you've gone to the bar yourself to order it. What if you'd, you know, I gather the bloke went and delivered the pint to Fraser sitting at the table. Well, fine, but if you just stand there and take it off them yourself, you can't be charged extra for that, surely. John's in Cuffley, coming back to charges. Hi, John.
Good morning.
You want to property tax?
This proposed or rumoured property tax. I have a property, live in a property which is worth over $500,000. Now, I pay all sorts of bills at the moment, and I'm a pensioner. Another $2,000 or $3,000 a year will make a difference. Mm-hmm. I don't see how they can justify it. If it was on new sales, possibly, yes. Mm-hmm. But no, I've lived here since 1988, I think it was. And the price of the property has gradually gone up.
Indeed.
And now, I pay over $2,000 or $3,000 a year council tax already. You know, how many beans do you think are in the bloody barrel?
Well, I think as part of the stamp duty thing, the report suggests that they're looking again at council tax and council banding, because it is a very odd system that means that a much lower cost house in a row of terraces in Barnsley is hit with a bigger council banding rate than a mansion in Kensington. That's not right.
Agreed.
So it does need to change, doesn't it?
I don't want to pay for their incompetence.
Well, is it their? They would argue it's not their incompetence. They would say the hole was created by the last administration and we're here to fix it, etc., etc.
And all I seem to get is they want to charge me. I've got, you know, by the time I pay for a carer, council tax has gone up, water rates have gone up, energy rates have gone up.
Do you mind me asking you, sir, how old you are? Roughly, ballpark, general.
89.
Can you imagine not being able to take the state pension until you were 70, for example?
Well, I was made redundant when I was 60.
So you took that as your cue to leave the workforce?
Yeah.
But imagine having to go to your 70. Would you have been able to string it out till you were 70?
When I worked in an office, I could have done it. But if I was, say, a bricklayer, I couldn't do it, could I?
No, I don't think you could. Except that might be the future. John, thank you very much indeed. Coming up,
we need to be clear that the purpose of that is to provide a pension in retirement. What it's not there to do is to encourage financial advisers to market pensions as a way of avoiding inheritance tax.
The government is paving the way, we're told, for the state pension age to be raised to 70 as a review considers tying future increases to life expectancy. That's a nice thing to feel on a Tuesday morning, isn't it? Strap in, folks. You're in it for another 40 years. We'll get into the details after the 8:46 news headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Volodymyr Zelensky says he's ready for a meeting with Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin about ending the war in Ukraine. Hamas has reportedly accepted a proposal for a 60-day ceasefire in Gaza in exchange for the partial release of Israeli hostages. And England's Children's Commissioner says dangerous algorithms are resulting in more young people seeing harmful sexual content online. LBC weather. Sunny spells developing for much of the UK after a cloudy start. Some heavy rain in the south. Highs of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are delays on the M25 clockwise from the Clackett Lane services to Junction 6 at Godstone. It's because a lorry's broken down and one lane is closed for recovery. Also on the M25, it's very busy clockwise clockwise at junction 27 at the M11. And that's because a car has broken down. Delays continue on the North Circular Road both ways to Onos Grove. That's all down to an accident. In Walthamstow, there are delays on the North Circular Road westbound to the Crooked Billet interchange. And that was after an accident that happened earlier. In Wood Green, West Green Road's very busy both ways. That's because of an ongoing police investigation. On the train, severe delays on the Elizabeth line to and from Heathrow Airport. And on the Underground, there are minor delays on the Central line.
This is LBC.
Who's a good human? Alex is. Because today's dog walk with Lulu the Corgi has turned into an off-grid adventure. But wherever Lulu's nose takes her, Alex will always gladly follow. That's why he also chooses Butternut Box for Lulu's meals. Freshly prepared and served straight from the fridge, helping Lulu thrive from nose to tail. Meaning one less trek for Alex as we deliver each box straight to your door. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
This is LBC.
£1.49 at McDonald's gets you a mini Oreo McFlurry. £1.49 on a big night out gets you...
Sorry, no trainers.
McDonald's save a menu. Actually get your money's worth. From 11am, price and participation may vary. Fees apply to delivery, subject to availability.
A southern train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Hurry, the Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss out on up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, you can still get £50 off your electric blind order. An easy way to control your blinds. But be quick, these offers end 26th of August. And if you find the same product with the same service for less, we'll match the price. Book your free in-home appointment today. Visit hillarys.co.uk. The Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss it. Conditions apply.
Save this bank holiday with Lidl. Bring the heat with 2 for £7 on barbecue meats like burgers, jumbo sausages and more holiday heroes. Only with Lidl Plus. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this bank holiday.
18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 27th of August.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. Top up on island fuel. Rest every 2 hours too. I inspect your pressure and tread. Prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with TRIP.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Tax and pints seem to be the subjects du jour this morning, which I'm not going to argue against, to be honest. David and David, I'll get to your calls in just a few moments. Let us return to the matter at hand, though, in the United States, where Presidents Zelensky and Trump met yesterday, a rather better meeting than they had in February, with his European Praetorian Guard, or Zelensky's European Praetorian Guard, with him in the form of Keir Starmer and Friedrich Merz and Emmanuel Macron there too. Sir Ed Davey joins us, leader of the Liberal Democrats and Liberal Democrat MP for Kingston and Surbiton. Thank you for coming on the programme. Is there any deal possible that you think Britain shouldn't lend its name to, Sir Ed? Morning.
Well, good morning, Tom. I mean, we're still digesting what occurred in the White House, but I'm still pretty worried that Donald Trump just wants to do a deal with Vladimir Putin, and that comes first rather than the interest of Ukraine and European security. And so I think the UK's position must always focus on that. What is President Zelensky is thinking about the deal, and also making sure that we're seen to be leading the support for Ukraine. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the coalition, the willing that the Prime Minister's put together and supported by Macron and Merz and others is really critical. It was good to see that European unity. But I think we need to send a message to Ukraine Kremlin, and indeed the White House, that we are there with Ukraine to the end. And that's why we've been saying, you know, give them more military support, seize those frozen Russian assets, send that signal that, you know, we're not there to, you know, back some deal that that Trump wants just because Trump wants to do a deal.
What would more British military support look like? I think you've talked about British Typhoons in Ukrainian airspace. Is that right?
Yeah. I think that's definitely something that should be considered. I'd want to do it with our European partners and talking to Ukraine to get the right package that would help them. I mean, one of the most worrying things that emerged in recent days was Donald Trump's massive concession to Vladimir Putin that there should be talks without a ceasefire. And, you know, I think Chancellor Merz was right to call that out. President Macron, I think we should call it out. I think it's asking too much of President Zelensky to sit down with Vladimir Putin while Vladimir Putin's forces are killing innocent Ukrainian people.
And the use of British troops in Ukraine to provide Ukrainian security guarantee, how ready do you think the country is to do that?
I don't know, to be honest, Tom, but I think it's the right thing to do. And I think we need to make that case to the British people, because I think that's what we should do. And to be
even
honest,
if they come into contact with Russian troops, God forbid.
Absolutely, God forbid. But a security guarantee is a security guarantee. Let's remember, we have those guarantees for NATO members of many different shapes and sizes. The Baltics, I was visiting British troops in Estonia recently and seeing the amazing job they're doing to get behind our Article 5 NATO commitment to the defence of the Baltics. And I think a similar guarantee is absolutely needed for any peace agreement. And I think it's really important, and again, I think the European leaders have done a good job here, that the US has to be part of that. Absolutely has to be part of that.
The former Defence Secretary, Sir Ben Wallace, was on the programme this morning, worrying that we are on the cusp of another 1938 Munich conference.
Yeah, I think he's right to be worried about that. I think he's right to be worried that if you appease an aggressor like Vladimir Putin, history has shown that that doesn't produce sustainable peace. And I think that's why we need to send this signal that we're behind Ukraine, that there is European unity to support Ukraine if we can't get a peace deal that President Zelensky is prepared to sign up to.
Just while I've got you, I'd like to take you to other matters if I can.
Sure, of course.
And on the issue of unity, there seems to be cross-party consensus that the incredibly expensive triple lock is going to be here to stay for pensioners. This says the state pension age could be rising to 70 as a review looks at life expectancy connected to pension age. Do the Lib Dems support the triple lock, whatever the cost may be?
Well, we do, and I'll tell you why. Back in 1980, Mrs. Thatcher and the Conservatives broke the link between the state pension and earnings, and over several decades, British pensioners got an increasingly worse deal compared to many other countries where the state pension is much more valuable. And therefore, I don't like a situation where British pensioners are getting a worse deal than many of their counterparts in countries which aren't as wealthy as ours. Yeah. So I think people who say, well, you know, we should get rid of the triple lock, they've got to say that they're prepared for British pensioners to be poorer than pensioners in other countries that aren't as wealthy.
Which pensioners, doesn't it? I mean, it depends. The pensioners who are solely on the state pension, yes, they would get poorer, but there are 500,000 pensioners who are going to be top-rate taxpayers in the next few years. Do they deserve to get a state pension that increases by, in inflationary terms, as much as 8% in recent years?
Well, they're paying the top rate of tax. I think the answer to your question was in your question. If people are paying the top rate of tax, they are making that extra contribution. And I think to have administrative complexities brought in, I think are unnecessary. The truth is, the vast majority of pensioners, the state pension is critical to their incomes and to their livelihoods. And I think a situation which was, you know, built up over decades, where our pensioners were getting a raw deal, that has to be turned around.
Would you scrap stamp duty?
Well, stamp duty is not a great tax, let's be really clear. It really gets in the way of people buying and selling properties. It's been used as a milch cow by chancellors of both Labour and Conservative, and it needs reform. Whether or not we have the financial position to get rid of it now is a completely different question. And I think everybody knows, looking at the British public finances, the Conservatives left them in an absolute disastrous mess. I'm afraid that this current government, because it really hasn't managed to get growth really going in our economy, has made some tax decisions which have been unfair and unwise. I don't think they're plugging the hole in our finances, which you'd have to do before you considered any major tax reform, of course, Tom. I don't think they're getting that right. And what Liberal Democrats have been arguing, and we keep arguing for it, is an economic growth strategy, starting with a new EU-UK customs union to bring down those costs, bring down those barriers, boost trade, boost growth, boost revenues to the Exchequer.
Good to talk to you. Thanks for coming on. Sir Ed Davey is the leader of the Liberal Democrats, Liberal Democrat MP for Kingston and Surbiton. Just before the news at 9, let's speak to David in Castle Cray. You want to talk about this potential stamp duty reform, David. Hi.
Hello, Tom. My initial thoughts would be that as soon as you take off a cost of buying a house, whether it be in stamp duties or they drop the borrowing rate, immediately house prices go up just to meet that demand. They'll say, well, I've got an extra spare £5,000 now. So house owners, I know we would do it, would say, well, we know we've freed up now that money you're not going to have to spend, so let's put it on the price. I mean, it's a bit mercenary, but by house sellers, yeah. I mean, I'm sure the estate agents would advise for it, so yeah. I'd be fine. I've just got an idea, though, that surely houses, say there's a limit, say there is a cut-off at 500,000, yeah. Half a million, that's a big number. Anything under that price will become more valuable because people are trying to keep under that number. So if it's worth 300,000, the idea will be to push it up to close that limit, but avoid paying anything.
It's a very good point.
But once you get over, people go, oh, just a minute, I've got to find this extra money that I've got to pay towards when I buy this place. So I don't know what the effect would be on the market, but I think essentially it's going to just push prices up and up all the time. I mean, the devil's in the details.
Well, quite, and we haven't got a lot of them at this stage, but history would say that you're right, David, that the prices just keep going up and up. Appreciate the call, thank you. From one David to another, here's David in Hinckley in Leicestershire. David on the pub.
Yes, indeed, Tom. I think it's time we knocked service charges on the head once and for all. I went into a pub, into a restaurant behind King's Cross, and I said, oh, have a pint, please, while I'm waiting for friends for lunch. And it came, and there was a 13.5% service charge on it. Whoa. And I looked at it, and I thought, this is ridiculous. All he's done is plastic from the bar to my table. And I think now I've made a conscious decision that I am no longer going to pay service charges at all.
Whoa, hang on. But it's not optional. You have to, don't you?
It's a discretionary service charge. My discretion is to say, no, I'm not going to pay it. If I go into Currys and buy a toaster, I don't say, have 10% on top for yourself, dear. Thank you for fetching it from the shelf for me. If I go into Asda and fill up a trolley full of shopping, I don't go to the checkout and the woman says, oh, well, £57, please. Oh, put £5.70 on for yourself. I don't do it. Why do we do it in a restaurant? It's absolutely ridiculous. The people in the restaurant are there. It's their job to serve you. It's the chef's job to prepare the food. He's being paid for it. You're paying quite well, quite highly in some cases for your meal or for your drinks. No, the time has come now to stop paying a service charge. I started it. I hope others will join me.
He's in the vanguard of saying no. David, thank you very much indeed for the call. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Coming up...
Unless we act, tomorrow's pensioners will be poorer than today's.
And there are a heck of a lot of tomorrow's pensioners. Some 1 in 4 of us are going to be pensioners in the next 50 years as the government paves the way for the state pension age to be raised to 70. We'll get your thoughts on whether or not you can last that long in the world of work. Meanwhile, down on the farm...
Just about get the tractor through...
But what about the trailer? What the hell am I going to do now?
Don't know, Jeremy. Farmers have warned that this year could be their worst ever harvest after, in some areas, a summer of drought. That means shortages of your favourite veg, and particularly if it's broccoli, it's going to get smaller. We'll get a review of life down on the farm after the news at 9 o'clock.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, President Zelensky says he's ready for a meeting with Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin about ending the war in Ukraine. Vladimir Zelensky held talks with the US President and European leaders on the issue at the White House last night. The talks included the topic of future security guarantees for Ukraine with US involvement. But defence expert Karen von Hippel's told LBC it's very unclear what form those guarantees might take.
Putin doesn't want any NATO troops nearby. And so even getting there is going to be difficult. I gather that the CDS, UK CDS chief of the defense staff and other military chiefs are going to be in DC meeting with the Americans to talk about what is in the art of the possible. Hopefully America will provide that backstopping that's needed if this peace is going to be implemented. But we're very far from that.
Hamas has reportedly accepted a proposal for a 60-day ceasefire in Gaza in exchange for the release of some Israeli hostages. Israel has yet to respond to the plan mediated by Egypt and Qatar. US prosecutors say a woman has admitted supplying the drug ketamine that contributed to the death of the actor Matthew Perry. Jasveen Sanger will plead guilty to 5 federal charges linked to Mr. Perry's death in 2023. England's Children's Commissioner says dangerous algorithms are resulting in more young children seeing harmful sexual content online. A report carried out before stricter age checks were introduced last month found most are likely to have stumbled upon it accidentally. More than a quarter of young people see adult content by the age of 11, with some as young as 6 being exposed. Becky Rice is from the charity Barnardo's.
We support children and young people who have displayed harmful sexual behaviour as a result of what they have seen online. We've also supported children who experiences of viewing pornography online has normalised their own abuse in a way that's been very harmful to them.
And it's reported the Chancellor is looking at a major reform of stamp duty. In its place, people who own and live in properties worth more than £500,000 could pay an annual tax. The Conservatives say the measure would punish aspiring homeowners. The government says it won't comment on speculation. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up a point at 91.59. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather, sunny spells for Wales, the southeast of England and the far west of Scotland. Some heavy rain in southern England later, highs of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
The delicious chocolate bubbles in Aero that make it a joy to eat. Aero. Feel the bubbles melt.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick.
Morning to you, 4 minutes past nine the time. Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at breakfast here on LBC. Hope we find you very well this Tuesday morning. Coming up, as the summer heat wave continues, beautiful weather we're having across large parts of the country, spare a thought for the farmers. They're saying this could be one of the worst harvests in a generation, warning of shortages of some fruit and veg on the supermarket shelves and a shrinkage of the stuff they can get out the ground. We'll get down on the farm later. Also,
shout at someone, say, oi, put that back. Some people will feel able to physically intervene.
The advice from a police and crime commissioner recently was that you need to help the police in stopping those prolific shoplifters by getting involved. One woman, though, urges caution. Emile Martin reported a gang of shoplifters at a Tesco's in East London for stealing, but became a victim of their brutality, which left her with injuries lasting over a decade. We'll speak to her.
Call 0345 60 60973. Tweet at LBC. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Very good morning to you. This hour,
because we all deserve to look forward to our retirement with hope, not fear. Retiring isn't just the end of your working life. It should be something that is new and joyful.
But how long is it going to take to get there? The government is, we're told, paving the way for the state pension age to be raised to 70 as a review considers tying future increases to life expectancy. This is a woman called Susie Morrissey, who has been commissioned by Liz Kendall, from whom you heard there, who's the Work and Pension Secretary, to review the official retirement age, saying she would examine the experience of other countries that already automatically link payments to life expectancy, including Denmark, which recently raised its retirement age to 70. There are plenty of reports about what this commission is going to be looking at this morning, including the state pension age rising from 67 next year to 68 between 2024 and 2046. Planned increases beyond this are likely to be at least another decade away. However, politicians have previously tried to bring forward increases amid concerns about the burden placed on public finances by the triple lock, which guarantees that the state pension rises by at least 2.5% each year, which the OBR said is going to cost at least £15 billion by the end of 2030. Meantime, there's analysis being done that suggests that there's going to be one in four Brits who is of pensionable age by 2050, which is demographically pretty tricky because someone's going to have to pay all their pensions, particularly their state pensions. A little earlier, I spoke to the pensions minister, Torsten Bell. Do you think the state pension age is going to get to 70?
No, I don't think you're about to see that in the near term. What you can see is plans to increase. Well, I'm just about to explain to you.
Thank you.
So what you're seeing is increase in the state pension age to 67 over the course of the next, from 2026 to 2028. Mm-hmm. You'll know there's an independent review underway as the 2014 Act put in place by the coalition government requires our government to do. We have to put that independent review.
I mean, look,
the government has to put a final response in by 2029. So we need to commission the inputs to that in advance. That's what we're doing. It's exactly the normal process.
And if that says state pension age needs to go up faster than it currently is, will you take that recommendation on?
Well, that's not how the process works. They provide a set of information. You raised some of the important issues that need to be considered. Longevity, exactly as you say, is an important issue. I mean, one of the sad bits of news over the last 15 years is that we haven't seen the increases in longevity that we were used to, particularly for poorer areas. We haven't seen them over the last 15 years in a way that we were seeing them in the previous decade. So that's what I mean by, like, you need to think about this in the round. We need to make sure we've got a health service and a healthier country. Yes, we need to have a sustainable set of public finances. That includes decisions on the state pension. That's why you're seeing
means testing. Do you ever see a time when the state pension is means tested?
Well, absolutely not. That's a mad idea. The only person that suggested that is Kemi Badenoch. It's a lunacy.
You don't think that it's people who have the 500,000 pensioners who pay the top rate of tax that they also deserve to get the state pension too?
Yeah, but look, let me explain why that needs to be the case, because if you want to have a clear system where people know that they receive the basics of the state pension in retirement, but know that they then do need to take responsibility of saving more for their own retirement, that's what automatic enrolment is like. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you're putting into a private pension.
I am, and you're coming for it.
Wait, I'm not coming for it. That's a ridiculous thing.
You're going to put my private pension, whatever's left of it, maybe in the future, if I want to give that to my children, you're going to put that in, roll that into madness.
Okay, I'll come back to that in a second. But you've asked a question about means testing. I want to explain why it's mad. And as I say, the only person I've heard suggest that is Kemi Badenoch. And the reason it's mad is because if you're going to have an incentive to save for your own private pension, you need to know that if you put a pound into your private pension, you don't have money taken out of your state pension. There needs to be a very clear incentive to save. That's what was put in place by the Turner Commission back in the 2000s. And I absolutely think that is the right approach.
Torsten Bell, the pensions minister. Dennis Reid is director of Silver Voices, who campaign for senior citizens. Good to see you again, Dennis. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme. I wonder what you make of this notion of a potential rise in the state pension age, not just from 67 to 68, but beyond, sir. Morning.
Good morning, Tom. Nice to talk to you again. This is not news, really, in the sense that we know that there is this review going on. I see that Torsten Bell sort of ruled out the retirement age going up to 70. But there are other factors involved, as well as life expectancy, which we're not doing very well on at the moment. The other factors are it's got to be healthy life expectancy. You've got to be able to work. And employers also have to take on older people, which they don't often do. So if you made redundant in your early 60s, it's very, very difficult indeed to get another job. And people in those circumstances, if they're not on the state pension, then they'll fall back on the benefit system and possibly get even more out of the system, if you like, than the state pension. So, you know, these factors also need to be taken into account. The big problem is not that we're living longer, which we're not really, the odd year here and there. The big problem, the challenge, I should say, to society, is that there's more and more of us. Those ages. Exactly. We're not living longer, but there's more of us because of the boom after the Second World War, the population boom after the Second World War. We've known about this for decades.
Yes, I mean, and it does mean that we're going to get a bit top-heavy, demographically speaking, in that we're going to have quite a lot more older people in the next few decades' time, and not many younger people, or not enough younger people coming through, arguably, to pay the taxes that pay the state pensions of those people who are going on to retire. Do you see that as a problem that is going to require a solution in the next 10 to 15 years? And if so, what might that solution look like?
Well, there needs to be a longer term solution. And on this, that I'm really speaking for the younger generations using our experience. And we definitely see that there is a need for a basic state pension for everybody.
Why everybody?
Why
for the person who's done very well in their life, who's got a lot of money stored up, huge number of properties they can sell, they don't necessarily need the state pension that they may have well contributed towards throughout their working life?
Well, I think Torsten Bell answered that. You do need a safety net that
Absolutely.
Everybody knows that they can depend on. And you are putting into the system in order to be able to have that safety net in your
retirement. It's a safety net that you might not necessarily need. So you don't need the net to be paid to you. It just exists. If you were to fall on very, very hard times, of course, then the safety net is there. That's what the welfare system is for. But everybody who pays into the welfare system does not make use of the welfare system.
No, but the state pension has always been on a different basis, that it's a universal system to provide that safety net. I mean, nobody knows whether they're going to fall on hard times later in life. Mm-hmm. They may need to go into a residential home and pay huge fees in the last few years of their lives. And the state pension in those circumstances does provide a basic supplement to whatever private income mm-hmm. that they have.
Good to talk to you. Dennis Reed, Director of Silver Voices, a campaign group for senior citizens. 9:13. Reem Ibrahim is Head of Media for the Institute of Economic Affairs. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme. I just see this as a definite. Of course the state pension age is going to get to 70 in the next few years. It sort of has to happen demographically, doesn't it?
Hi, good morning, Tom. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. We've got to look at this from the state of public finances. And I think we really have to have a conversation about what is genuinely sustainable and who needs support when it comes to looking at the economy as a whole. And one in four pensioners are millionaires. So I think that when we think
about... Well, they have millionaire households. Just to be really clear about that. They're not millionaires income-wise. They might be overall estate worth £1 million, which is rather different.
Indeed, but very few people are millionaires in terms of their cash. Most of the time it is an asset. And the majority of those pensioners will have homes that are worth vastly more than £1 million. And that money is usually in a house that is mortgage free. So I think we have to have a conversation about whether or not those particular individuals do need the state pension. And again, I completely understand why this opinion is unpopular, but we have to look at the wider context of the economy. It is absolutely unsustainable to continue footing the bill for taxpayer-funded pensions that are going to wealthy people. I mean, should somebody like Lord Alan Sugar really be getting a state pension? I don't think so.
He's paid in all his life, Reem. He's paid in all, as everyone has. It's an entitlement. You are owed it.
I don't believe that you're owed anything, and this is the point, right? You don't pay taxes your entire life. You don't pay national insurance your entire life. It doesn't then stay in a little pot in the Treasury that you take out when you turn pension age. That's, you know, that is a complete lie. And I think part of the problem here, Tom, is that the entire notion of national insurance and what a pension is and what national insurance pays for is a lie, right? The government have always lied to
us. It's a fiction.
It's a fiction. National insurance contributions are effectively just another income tax. So I think it should just be rolled into income tax so that clarity is there. You do not pay national insurance your whole life to go towards a pension. If you've paid in your entire life, that was to go towards pensioners that have already long gone. You know, the current pension is being paid for by taxpayers today, and we're expected to pay or spend, sorry, the same amount that we spend on policing, education and defence alone, just on pensions. This is absolutely unsustainable. We're asking why Rachel Reeves must raise taxes this year yet again. This is not the last time it's going to happen. We're going to have to raise taxes again next year and the year after and the year after until we're left with absolutely nothing, because every young person with this ounce of ambition has left the country to go to Dubai or wherever because they don't want to pay the tax burden. So we have to be very honest about what is sustainable. If we want the country's finances to be sustainable in the long run, we have to be very honest. And I'm sorry, but millionaires don't deserve taxpayer funded benefits.
Thank you for coming on the programme. Reem Ibrahim, head of media for the Institute of Economic Affairs. Put like that, millionaires don't deserve taxpayer funded benefits. I think that's inarguable. I don't think you have to be a left wing Corbynista to think that that's a very bad thing to do, to hand over taxpayers' money to already very wealthy people. How you define what their wealth is, that's a good question. But in a scenario where we are not rolling around in wads of cash, or waddling in it, we're not rolling around in wads of cash as a nation, can we keep paying the taxpayers of today, pay the pensioners of today, from their income, a state pension, even if they are very wealthy? I know you think you've paid in all your life, and maybe you're owed it. Reality? I don't think, well, I'm 38. By the time I ever retire, God knows when that will be, that's at least minimum 32 years away, I think. I don't know how I'm going to get there, but, you know. There won't be a state pension. And frankly, if I've been lucky enough to get some money behind me, and I've got a chunky private pension and all that stuff, nor should there be for someone in that position, would be my view. 0345 6060 973, get your calls after this. Coming up...
The yields are just disastrous on this farm. I knew they were going to be down this year because it was such a peculiar year. All that sunshine, but just no rain.
Get ready for shortages on the shelves, say some farmers. That's Harry, an arable farmer in the Cotswolds. We'll look at the harvest from hell. After the 9:18 news headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Volodymyr Zelensky says he's ready for a meeting with Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin about ending the war in Ukraine. Hamas has reportedly accepted a proposal for a 60-day ceasefire in Gaza in exchange for the partial release of Israeli hostages. And England's Children's Commissioner says dangerous algorithms are resulting in more young people seeing harmful sexual content online. LBC weather. Sunny spells developing for much of the UK after a cloudy start. Some heavy rain in the south. Highs of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25, anti-clockwise to junction 15 at the M4. It's because of an accident, and traffic's now being held just before the M4 junction, and there are delays all the way back to 17 at Maple Cross. And then also on the M25, there are delays clockwise from junction 5 at the M26 to 6 at Godstone, because a lorry's broken down. It's taking about half an hour to get through that queue. Still very slow on the North Circular Road in both directions to Arnos Grove, and that's all down to an accident. And it's still very busy westbound to Walthamstow on the North Circular Road after an accident, but all the lanes are now back open. In Wood Green, West Green Road is partially blocked both ways and there are delays on the approach.
This is LBC.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddie.
Book a free hearing test today at bootshearingcare.com and save up to £300 with our free technology upgrade. Boots, with you for life. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the all-new LBC app. Download it for free from the App Store.
Canal Adventures in St Pancras.
That's a new one for us.
Oh, kids, cafe's this way.
Oh, eat your heart out, Venice. This is lovely.
What's that? Yes, I have both Captain Nats for the boat ride.
Train back.
So that was two pastries, one boat ride, and no tantrums. Result!
Love this shot of them driving the boat.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
Combine your pensions with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Calling all little explorers. The hunt for squishmallows is on. Who will your little one find in their Happy Meal? Will they chill out with Cam on the beach? Or rock on with Hallie? Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 25th of August, from 11 a.m, squishmallows comprise toys only. Subject to availability. Fair ordering policy applies.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Here's Phil in Fareham at 9.22 this morning. Good morning, Tom. So this bubbling snowflake has the temerity to tell me and thousands of other pensioners that we don't deserve a pension, having paid in for 49 working years and had the foresight to bother to save a small private pension to support myself and my wife in later life. Phil, no. I'm not saying you don't deserve to have a pension. Of course you do. I just think that the pension that you receive from the state, and by the way, there is no pot marked Phil's pension that you have paid into for 49 years. Your taxes have gone to pay for your parents' pension, as my taxes are paying for the pension of people listening to this programme, for which you are more than welcome. Of course, don't thank me, you've done it for your parents, so that's absolutely fine. That's how it works. But given the ongoing cost of all of this, if you've got money behind you, and to what extent that money exists and what figure are we putting on it, don't know. I just don't know that we're going to be in a financial position to keep saying you can have taxpayers' money because of your age go into your bank account regardless of how much money you've already got. I honestly don't know why this is controversial, genuinely. Anne's in Haywards Heath. Anne.
Tom, thank you for having me on.
Very welcome.
Very quickly, I might have 3 points. One is I worried many years ago with we're getting women back to work. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's going to really hit the voluntary sector because we have a lot of talk about care in the community. Well, that was provided free by women who looked after the children, looked after the elderly neighbours and provided a lot and still do. The voluntary sector saves this country billions. It really does. Now, if they increase their pension age even more, it will be impossible because the over 60s are the biggest volunteers now because the women have all had to go back to work. So it's the over 60s who are doing that, providing that voluntary care for all ages. And in the end, because we haven't got all that support, the government has to put money into childcare, more money into care for older people that was all provided free. I don't think some people look at the budgets. The other thing is that, of course, all of us paid for our pensions over the years. The fact that it didn't benefit us, it benefits the generations ahead of us. So when it comes to this generation, well, of course, that is an issue. And yet we have the lowest pensions in Europe, and we always have. But I would just say, Tom, if you don't mind, could everybody look up the 45 goals of communism to see why we're in the mess we're in?
Right. On your second point, Anne, about the relative lack of a state pension compared to European cousins, would it not be fairer to transfer some of the state pension that is bequeathed to a wealthy pensioner to someone who genuinely needs that money, who has nothing to their name, for a whole variety of different reasons, whatever they may be, but the safety net is increased for the people who, without which, would have nothing?
Well, Well, I think nobody could say that might not be fair. But the biggest pension budgets we have, and I know because I've been a councillor for years and I've seen it, is the high salary staff in local government, in government, in national government. Their pensions are huge.
Yeah.
The big cost, this blooming council tax that is iniquitous, it's all going on areas that we would say that shouldn't be.
Now, that's a very, very good point. There is a huge public sector pensions liability. Massive. The teachers' pension thing is about to explode. So, Anne, I would agree with you. I think that there is a real, real problem there that is slowly oozing out into the open. God, that's a horrible choice of verb. Thank you very much indeed for the call. Ken, I'll get to you in just a few moments. 9:26 the time. Next.
It's so dry. Feels like it's never going to rain again. To actually get some decent moisture back in the ground, it's going to take a lot of rain, isn't it?
Prepare for the harvest from hell. Farmers are warning that this year could be their worst ever harvest after a summer of drought. Heat waves across parts of the country have left growers fearing a record low yield for their crop and vegetable harvest. Broccoli farmers, I read, are particularly in trouble. Ben Andrews is an organic tenant farmer who runs a mixed farm in Herefordshire. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme, Mr. Andrews. Talk us through how bad it's been, sir.
Morning. It's farmers complaining about the weather is it's nothing particularly groundbreaking, is it? But we've come from last summer being one of the wettest, most miserable summers we've had to one of the driest. It started off really good, really nice spring, and then it hasn't really rained. And I think in Herefordshire, where I am, we're one of the driest counties in the country. A lot of our crops, so I'm just stood actually out in one of our lettuce crops. I've just bodged together some irrigation with what water we've got left to try and save them, because these plants haven't grown probably in about 2 weeks. And we're looking, if we can't get these growing, we're looking at a gap of maybe 2 weeks in crops when we should have successive crops right the way through the season.
2 weeks in my world doesn't sound like a particularly long time, but in your game, that's everything, is it? That's the difference between having it and not having it.
Yeah, I mean, it keeps the lights on. Yeah, we need to be selling lettuce pretty much every single day of the week. We're tenant farmers, so we've got rent to pay every month. All the overheads we've paid to put these lettuce in the ground, all the other crops as well. The plants aren't cheap. And so it's a pretty high value product, and we could really do with seeing a bit of return from that.
Why did you get into this game? Is this a tough industry?
Yeah. Well, I mean, my family have been farmers for in and around the county for about 500 years. We haven't moved far, but it's just growing food is like it's a fantastic thing to do. It's a privilege as well. I don't see it as a right. But things have not been this hard before. Mm. I'm 43 now. We have some of the nicest soil in the country that is the easiest. We can grow just about anything on our farm with really rich soil. But the weather conditions over the last, I'd say, 10 years have just been so unpredictable that it is starting to make me consider, especially with the vegetables, whether vegetables are worth continuing with. And it is a business decision. I'm not romantically attached to it. And if we have another year where, if it doesn't recover, and we have another year where we don't make, where we can make a loss from it, then yeah, it's not worth doing next year, and we'll look to do something else.
What will my listeners see this summer, or maybe later into this winter, on the supermarket shelves if this doesn't work out, Ben?
Yeah, there might be slightly less variety. So for example, cabbage, broccoli heads might be a bit smaller. If they are more expensive, I'd like to see some of that cost being passed on to the producers, because that doesn't often happen. I don't want to say empty shelves and sort of like make cause a run on broccoli in the supermarket, but The whole of Europe is feeling the pinch here. Yeah. The whole, this is not just an isolated instance. We've got, like, I've heard for, I think in the news, fig farmers in Italy, having the worst season they've ever had. If you look at the devastating floods in Spain last year, huge losses. And this is happening, it's not a 1 in 10 year event anymore. It's gone to 1 in 5 and to 1 in 2.
Well, we wish you very well with it, Ben. Good luck. There's clearly solidarity across Europe for the plight of the farmer at the moment. Ben Andrews is an organic tenant farmer, runs a mixed farm near Leominster in Herefordshire. You've been warned about what you might be able to expect at the shops. Talking of the shops...
10 years ago, I reported shoplifters in a Tesco. Minutes later, I was attacked and my life changed forever. Every system meant to protect me failed and shows the urgent need for real systemic reform. I'll be sharing that with Tom shortly.
We'll speak to Emily Martin after the news at 9:31. Dominic Ellis.
President Zelensky says he's ready for a meeting with Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin about ending the war in Ukraine. Vladimir Zelensky held talks with the US president and European leaders on the issue at the White House last night. The Children's Commissioner for England says research by her own office found children as young as 6 are being exposed to online pornography. Dame Rachel D'Souza says more than half of children have seen such material by the age of 13. And it's reported the Chancellor is looking at a major reform of stamp duty. In its place, people who own and live in properties worth more than £500,000 could pay an annual tax. LBC weather. Sunny spells will develop for much of the UK after a cloudy start. Some heavy rain for the south of England. Highs of 26 degrees.
This is LBC.
The holiday park industry is in the spotlight after thousands of holiday park homeowners lost what they...
You've heard it in the news. Holiday park homeowners being hit with sudden site fee increases, fake resale promises, and dramatic losses in the value of their holiday homes. The Holiday Park Advice Centre could help you get compensation if you were missold. Contact the Holiday Park Advice Centre today. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wickes kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wickes, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, with our spend and save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Terms and minimum spend apply.
Train to Worthing for scuba training. Yep, we're that family now.
Josh, flippers off until you're in the water, mate.
Well, I look ridiculous, but they're loving it.
Maddie, goggles the other way around, sweetie.
Seats found, kids happy. Heading home. Definitely bringing these wetsuits to our next beach day.
Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
You might remember the Police and Crime Commission. I think it's for the Thames Valley. I don't want to impugn the bloke, but pretty sure it was the Thames Valley Police and Crime Commissioner, suggesting that we, the public, need to help the police out when it comes to apprehending and dealing with shoplifters, and an epidemic of which is sweeping across the country. You know all about the problems there. That advice has, it hasn't been met well by some of those who have tried to apprehend shoplifters or have got themselves involved, either through accident or deliberately choosing to. We'll speak to one woman who found herself on the wrong end of the ire of shoplifters, much to her physical and mental cost, actually. We'll speak to Emily Martin in a few moments' time about her story. Ken's in Rutland, coming back to the pensions. Hi, Ken.
Morning, Tom. You've got my blood boiling, pal.
Jesus.
I'm a pensioner, right? But I work, right? I've carried on working, yeah? And my tax bill has gone up £400 a month.
Yep.
So instead of getting whatever the pension is, I'm £400 down. So imagine if I'm a millionaire, how much tax I'd be paying then. So any pension a millionaire gets straight away is going to be taken back in tax, right? So how much would it cost to means test the pension? I'm sure, given the inability of our government and politicians to do anything on the cheap, mm-hmm. It would end up costing more. than what the pension is being paid out to these
Ken, listen, I see that as an argument all the time. I hear it all the time. And listen, it may well be true, in which case I will take a back seat. But that still doesn't deal with what I think is the principal unfairness of handing over taxpayers' money, of which you are one, taxpayers' money to people via the state pension who, if we're honest, if they're honest, don't really need it. Good on them. They've got themselves in that position. They will be paying tax on the pension that they're drawing down, so they're taxpayers too. But they don't need that money, and that money could be better used, were the means testing affordable, to give to pensioners who are on the poverty line, because who the hell can survive on 12 and a half grand a year or whatever it is?
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. Well, this is why I've carried on working. Yeah?
So please don't allow your blood to boil,
sir. Enough to be able to work.
Well, good on you, and fair play to you, but please don't allow this to boil your blood. I really don't think that this is an argument that can be split down right or left political lines, what have you. We can't afford to give taxpayers' money as a handout to people who don't need that money. Can't do it.
Okay, so you said, or that lady earlier said, oh, we're going to have to raise the pension age to 70 or whatever. Yeah? Can you imagine if you're a labourer at the age of 70?
Disaster.
Exactly. So you're a labourer, you're 60 years old, you can't do the job anymore, so you have to give your job up and go on welfare. It's going to cost more in welfare than what they would have gotten the pension in the first place.
So this is the state pension age. The private pension age, don't know. That can vary depending on what you do. And a lot of people, one of the very, very good and effective changes that has been brought in recent years is the notion of auto-enrolment, that when you're on a staff contract somewhere, you've got a job, you've got a full-time PAYE job, you are automatically paying into a pension. Your employer is paying a bit, it needs to be more, into that pension too. Very, very difficult if you're self-employed, though. Very difficult.
Yeah, and let's face it, you've advocated private pensions and all the rest of it. Fantastic. Except the Chancellor's going to come and chase us for money.
Ken.
And we'll end up paying tax on it.
Well, I don't know if you heard my chat with Torsten Bell, who's a very well-respected former think tank head and now the pensions minister, poo-pooing my upset at the idea that your unused private pension will be rolled into your estate, and if you exceed thresholds, you will be charged inheritance tax on that. Now, well, I just think that is so deeply unpopular and unhelpful as to need to be done away with.
It stops people doing it.
Yeah. Well, in theory it shouldn't, because the thresholds are so high that very few people will actually pay it. But again, I come back to the principal unfairness of it. I think if you are going to have to pay inheritance tax on the value of your property that you haven't done anything to increase, you've just lived in it, I can get by. That's sort of fair enough. That's kind of unearned and you haven't done anything for it. I get that. But you've paid into your pension. You've done the right thing to save. Can appreciate the call. Thank you very much indeed. Some breaking news for you, 9:38 the time. The Coalition of the Willing are going to be meeting again virtually today to debrief after last night's talks at the White House. This is a spokesperson for the Polish Prime Minister, Donald Tusk, said he would take part in a midday call. EU leaders also to take part in a virtual European Council at 1 p.m. Brussels time. So more Coalition of the Willing talks happening today. We're being told presumably the Prime Minister will be chairing some of those calls of the Coalition of the Willing later on today. I have to say, the pace and frequency of these conversations, flying out to Washington for a very quick, then back to have more conversations, tells you about the amount of work that is clearly going on behind the scenes here to try and bring this war in Ukraine to a conclusion. It is extraordinary. It's completely dominating the Prime Minister's time, and the biggest commodity a Prime Minister has is their time, and this is dominating it, it would seem. More details as we get them. 9:39. Next.
Shout at someone. Say, oi, put that back. Some people will feel able to physically intervene.
That was the advice from the Thames Valley Police and Crime Commissioner, Matthew Barber, on what to do if you encounter a shoplifter. Many more people are, unfortunately, that the police cannot be solely relied upon to deal with the problem. One person who did get involved was Emily Martin, an event manager, who in 2015 was attacked by a gang of shoplifters in Tesco's after they overheard her reporting them to a shop manager. She joins me live. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme. Just take us back, if you don't mind, and apologies if it's difficult, to that moment in 2015 at that supermarket.
Why? Well, I was doing my shopping
in Tesco's, I witnessed a gang of teenagers shoplifting in Hackney Central, and I tried to do the right thing. I reported that they were shoplifting to a member of staff and did my shopping. And then when I left, minutes later, I was attacked in the car park by that gang of teenagers. I was punched in the face, and I needed multiple surgeries from that.
How many of them were there?
About five or six. Yeah. And I've developed PTSD. But I have to say, it wasn't just I don't think it was just the attack that was the most shocking element of it. It was that, you know, 10 years on, I can honestly say that every system that should have helped me afterwards has failed me. And that has been the biggest shock, I think.
Well, can I ask you about the justice system then in all of this? So you've been attacked by a gang of shoplifters or potential shoplifters. Very severe, and I've seen the pictures. Pictures are in the paper today, Emily, of your injuries. Absolutely appalling.
I didn't realise it was in the paper.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
What happened? What prison sentence did they receive?
So there were no arrests made. No arrests were made. No suspects were identified. In terms of failures, the police didn't investigate properly, as far as I'm concerned. The Tesco's claim the CCTV was lost in a technical error, and they didn't offer any help. No sort of real apology, no ice pack on the night, no first aid, safety on the night. The police, they asked me to come to the station late at night, between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. In the night following that attack, which had happened at about midnight, which seemed to me that they were putting their shift roster over my safety. That just seemed like a really odd sort of request on the part of the police.
So when you heard the advice of the Thames Valley Police and Crime Commissioner about what the public should do or could do, could be helpful to the police to do around shoplifters, what did you think?
Well, I agree with the sentiment that, you know, society, you know, we do live in a society, and I do think that apathy in society is dangerous. But in terms of what his point was, that just people should get involved, I agree with the sentiment, but there needs to actually be a safety net for victims in those instances, because I'm proof that just doesn't exist.
And I'm really sorry to hear it, Emily. Thank you so much for coming on. Emily Martin, attacked after reporting a gang of shoplifters outside Tesco. They overheard her reporting them to a shop manager. Left with very severe injuries. I mean, absolutely appalling injuries, and seemingly let down at every turn. So would you... If you're 6'6", and you're a big, strong, tough guy, maybe you feel more inclined to wrestle the shoplifter to the ground when you see them. If you're on your own as a woman and it's late at night, you wouldn't, would you? No. 03456060973, the number. Nick's in Manchester. Nick?
Hi, Tom. Hi. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome.
Congratulations on the slot. I'm sorry to not hear James, but you'd probably be the best replacement. So,
that's all right. Yeah. He's on in a bit. So don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Fire away, Nick.
Oh, right. Yeah, sorry. I'm too early. Yeah. So I work as an investment consultant to pension schemes, and I mostly give advice to the trustees of pension schemes and companies as well. And as part of that, I'm advising on both defined benefit pension schemes as also defined contribution pension schemes. And I agree with you that...
Oh, my God.
By the time... I'm the same age as you. By the time we retire, we're probably unlikely to have access to a state pension, or if we do, it's going to be at a much later age and a much smaller amount. But something that I've gleaned over my career is that, you know, older people are much likely to have defined benefit pension arrangements, which are much more generous than the defined contribution arrangements that young people have today. So I feel like we're staring at a double whammy here, which is older people have access to a more generous state pension, albeit it should be more generous, but that is what it is. Mm-hmm. And they also have access to defined benefit pension arrangements. Young people are going to retire, not have much of a state pension, and probably not have much of a private pension either. So I think the government needs to do something about it. The public finances are in a
bit of
a state.
And then you'd say, then you could argue, well, for the lucky few who have parents in that position, they might see a transfer of wealth from their parents, whether it's their house or the remainder of their pension pot, what have you, to that person, which would help them get them through the fact that their state pension might not exist and their private pension is going to be very low. However, that's going to be bundled up in inheritance tax now from next year.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of see the point, although I think that inheritance tax is one wealth tax that we have in this country that actually works. And to be honest, I think if you're in a position that you've got a family who've got a really expensive house, a really generous state pension, then, you know, why shouldn't they pay a bit of tax on that? You know, I come from a poor family. I'm not going to inherit anything from my parents.
Well, I take the point about the house. I find that, well, this is private pension pots. And I find that really difficult, I have to say. I'm willing to have to, you know, lay down my arms about this if someone can get me to pacify me sufficiently on this one. But I do find the notion of that very, very difficult. You've saved as a private citizen with your own private money to your own private pension. Yes, you've received some tax relief on it. Fine. That's the vehicle that it encourages you to invest in it. And now, if it's over a certain amount, rolled into your estate, you want to hand it over to your kids, bam, the state comes in. Leave me alone. Let me get on with it. Nick, thank you very much indeed. 9:47, news headlines, Dominic Ellis.
President Trump says he's called Vladimir Putin to start work on a summit with Volodymyr Zelensky. Hamas has reportedly accepted a proposal for a 60-day ceasefire in Gaza in exchange for the release of some Israeli hostages. And it's reported that Chancellor Rachel Reeves is looking at a major reform of stamp duty. LBC weather, cloudy across much of the UK. Sunny spells will develop for large parts of Wales, England and Scotland later. Highs of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the Circle Line, but also minor delays on the Bakerloo, the Central, the District, Hammersmith and City, Metropolitan and Northern lines, and also minor delays on the Elizabeth Line to and from Heathrow Airport. On the road, severe delays on the M25 anti-clockwise. It's slow for about 40 minutes from Junction 17 at Maple Cross to 15 at the M4. That was after an accident. And then clockwise, it's slow up to Junction 6 at Godstone. A lorry has broken down. The A1M traffic's being held southbound at Junction 7 at Stevenage South. It's all down to an accident, so traffic is being held, and as a result, there are lengthy delays on the approach.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, Lewis Goodall.
Trump, Starmer, Zelensky, all hail a breakthrough at the White House yesterday. But was it really all that?
Lewis Goodall on LBC.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
Book a free hearing test today at bootshearingcare.com and save up to £300 with our free technology upgrade. Boots, with you for life. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
This is LBC.
At EDF, we don't just encourage you to use less electricity. We actually reward you for it. That's why when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power. Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week, subject to fair usage. For all T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like? Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm, that is good. Now that's what a sarnie should sound like. Go all crisp in with Walker's. Delicious.
Managing your business is a big task. To then stay on top of the numbers as well, you're only human. That's why the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform supports your business growth as the number one recommended cloud accounting software. Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals, verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
Save this bank holiday with Lidl. Bring the heat with 2 for £7 on barbecue meats like burgers, jumbo sausages and more holiday heroes. Only with Lidl Plus. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this bank holiday.
18 plus TV only while stocks last. Terms apply. See Lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 27th of August.
At TfO, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
9:51, here's Tony on WhatsApp. Tom, I saw you on the television recently. Are you really only 38? Thanks, Tony. Yeah, tough paper round. It's what working for the government will do to you after a while. Hillary's in Highbury. Hillary, you want to talk about shop theft? Hi.
Hi, good morning. I own a cafe and store in Clapton, mm-hmm. and we do have shoplifters, and we have a group chat on Upper Clapton and Lower Clapton Road, mm-hmm. and we WhatsApp each other when people come in. And I think it was towards the end of the pandemic, we were open for takeaway only, and a woman came in we know who she is. I don't even know if I recognised her at that point. But anyway, she grabbed a bunch of tulips that were near the door and ran out. And I instinctively ran after her and managed to grab her by her hood. Gosh. And she was going crazy. And I was shouting. And so my husband ran out and the chef ran out. The chef's a big bloke. And we got hold of her near the bus stop and held her until the police came. And she was struggling like mad, but we knew who she was, and she regularly thieves along there, and she's got a drug problem, and she just takes anything usually,
which is very sad but very common. I mean, it is very common that the people who do the shoplifting in the main are repeat offenders.
Yeah,
and there's a drug problem, or there's some other underlying thing.
Yeah, but she's extremely violent. She's been in and out of prison. And the police came, and she spat at the people that were holding her. By this time, my husband and the chef had got hold of her. And we're just so sick of it. It's all the time, and it's too often. And they let her go. And then we found out there was actually a warrant for arrest.
Oh, you're joking.
They let her. No, I'm not. This is what happens. But the police don't do their due diligence. They couldn't be bothered to check. They just let her go.
And this is the problem that, because as you say, it's the same people. There's a stat on this yesterday, I think. The same people keep reoffending, and it takes however many offences before they're finally, unfortunately for them, but fortunately for everybody else, put behind bars for a bit. Hilary, thank you. Alan's in Poole. Back to pensions. Hi, Alan.
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
Okay. Yeah, good, sir. Good, sir. Thoughts on
this? I know you're on one of your favourite subjects, which is fine, but I think that we should actually change the name from old age pensioner. On full disclosure, I'm 82, or 81 actually. But the fact of the matter is that I think what we should call it is universal basic income for old people. Now, the thing is this, is that, of course, if you started to, and I'll just let you know, I've got a 50-year final salary private pension, all right?
Fantastic. Well done. Okay. Congratulations. Okay.
Well, that's fine, and we spoke about this before.
We did.
But I think the issue really is that the elephant in the room, I think that universal basic income for old people, if you take Finland, which is the happiest country allegedly in the world, they have a universal basic income. So I'm paying 40% on my either my private pension or my state pension, whichever you like, I'm paying 40%. I haven't got a problem with that. because I think that we have a social responsibility.
But you are earning well. If you're paying 40% tax, you're
absolutely I'm not complaining one little bit.
Well, I'm not trying to tell. I think that's fantastic. I'm delighted for you. You've worked damn hard for it. Well done.
This is the point. The real elephant in the room is public sector pensions. If you take the tax take in this country, we'll keep it very simple at a trillion. We're paying $100 billion on interest debt, all right, and we're paying £145 billion a year in public sector pensions. And it's unaffordable. My private pension was stopped in 2002, and the last 6 years, 7 years of my, I was on a private pension, okay? But it was still okay. It's not a problem. Not complaining. What I'm saying is that the public sector is absolutely unaffordable. And the simple reason that nobody talks about it was in 1998, Gordon Brown took away the tax credits. And if you look at all the banks, all the big banks, all the big institutions in the country, there is no private pensions. People will talk about old age pensions, but the thing that is really the sore is public sector pensions.
I think you're right. There is a problem in the historic generosity of some of those public sector pension schemes. Of course, that's always been the trade-off, hasn't it? Your wages are, broadly speaking, lower in the public sector because you get a more generous pension. But to what extent it is overly generous, I think, is going to have to be someone is going to have to grasp this in the next 10, 15 years, and it ain't going to be pretty. Alan, thank you very much indeed. Mind how you go. Shirley's in Leytonstone to finish today. Hi, Shirley.
Hi, Tom. I've waited long while and I've got more and more nervous.
Oh, Shirley, don't be nervous.
No, Tom, whenever I hear you're on about old age pensioners and what they've got and what they're paid in and they can't have this, and don't forget, I've lived in my house for years. It has gone up astronomically. Mm-hmm. That is not my fault. That is living in London. That mm-hmm. is everybody. Mm-hmm. This house will go to pay for my upkeep when I can no longer look after myself. Mm-hmm. If I haven't got this house and this income, who will look after me? There are no state. There are no places for the state to look after me. I've got a family, yes, but they don't live in London.
Shirley, I don't want you to sell your house. I don't want you to move out of your house. I don't want that house. It's yours.
No, I know, but you do pick on the pensioners.
No, Tom, please.
Directly, they just said about doing something with your private pension. You said, leave it alone.
Yes.
Okay, leave us alone.
Shirley,
I'm sorry. If I tell you the difference, if Nick Ferrari was on now, because he's nearer pension age, he would think differently.
I'm going to text him now because I'm absolutely certain, Shirley.
I tell you what,
a man of his means.
He's on honeymoon. Please don't. He's on his honeymoon. Please don't. You know, I mean, God.
He's busy on his honeymoon. Should we leave it at that?
Tom, you do this every time.
Shirley.
I feel so sorry for the old people in this country.
Shirley.
I do.
I'm trying
Can I speak? Because I'm speaking for the majority of old people in this country. Mm-hmm. We feel like we're not wanted.
You are.
Honestly. No. Not the way people are talking. No, don't change it.
No, I'm not.
Because you are one of the worst people who keep on about old age pensioners. Their houses are worth a million. That is not our fault, Tom.
I'm not, Shirley. Gosh, I've left you with such a completely wrong impression, which is, of course, entirely my fault. I am absolutely on your side. I want to protect more of that money that you have. I do think that house valuation is a reasonable thing to be taxed inheritance on. But your private pension, no, that should be left alone. Shirley, I wish you very well. I won't send the text to Nick. Thank you very much indeed for your time today. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back both on Global Player and the brand new LBC app. You can read and watch the latest from LBC, put your news categories in the order that you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. It is new, it is official, and it is for free from your app store now. Coming up at 1, it's Sheila Fogarty. Next, Lewis Goodall.
He's on honeymoon, Tom. How dare you? Why don't you leave the man alone?
Leave him alone.
You leave Shirley. Yeah, she's off your Christmas card list. Trump and Zelensky, Starmer, Macron, Merz, the great and the good of Western diplomacy. All hail the major breakthrough at the White House yesterday. European leaders went to bow at the feet of the court of Trump in a desperate attempt to lob the ball back into Vladimir Putin's court. In that, perhaps, they succeeded. There is talk of a bilateral summit, which Trump certainly doesn't want. But what in reality changed yesterday? Isn't the truth we are in an endless holding pattern? Each side trying to court Trump's favor, each time Trump believing the last person to whom he was speaking. Do you have any belief, any faith, as the PM chairs a coalition of the willing today, that we're any closer to peace? And crucially, would you support British troops on the ground? 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, President Trump says yesterday's meeting at the White House was a very good step towards peace for Ukraine and Russia. Mr. Trump says he started to arrange a face-to-face meeting between Vladimir Zelensky and Vladimir Putin. The US president also said that America will be involved in guaranteeing Ukraine's security. Government Minister Thorsten Bell says Europe has a key role to play.
We and 30 other countries, now including the United States, need to be prepared to play our part in providing those security guarantees. We can't ask the Ukrainian people to sign up to a system of just trusting President Putin after the illegal invasion 3 years ago. So if we want to see a meaningful peace, it will need to involve meaningful guarantees.
In the last few minutes, it's been confirmed Sir Keir Starmer will co-chair a call of the Coalition of the Willing later following yesterday's meet at the White House. Qatari and Egyptian mediators are waiting for a formal response from Israel about a 60-day ceasefire in Gaza. Hamas has reportedly accepted a US-backed plan in exchange for the partial release of some Israeli hostages. Israel says it wants a comprehensive deal that would see all captives returned. A charity is warning teenagers are still being bombarded with content about suicide and self-harm on social media. The Molly Rose Foundation analysed videos recommended to a 15-year-old girl's account just before the Online Safety Act came into account. It found almost all the videos recommended on Instagram Reels and TikTok were harmful. The Foundation's director, Andy Burrows, has told LBC further action is required.
Preventable harm is now happening on this government's watch. We know that we lose a young person to suicide where technology plays a role every single week. And so it is for the politicians to decide, are they prepared to roll up their sleeves and take the decisive action? Yes, to build on the legislation that we've got, but to strengthen it.
The Technology Secretary, Peter Kyle, says 45 websites are being investigated under the new act. Instagram's owner, Meta, and TikTok say they both proactively take down 99% of harmful content. A council's expected to find out later whether it's been successful in its legal attempts to stop a hotel in Essex being used to house asylum seekers. Epping Forest District Council applied to the High Court for a temporary injunction over the use of the Bell Hotel. It says the area has experienced unprecedented levels of protest and disruption. And it's reported the Chancellor is looking at a major reform of stamp duty. Instead, people who own and live in properties worth more than £500,000 could pay an annual tax. The government says it won't comment on speculation. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 17 at £91.74. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunny spells will develop for Wales, the southeast of England and far west of Scotland. Later, some heavy rain for southern England, highs of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 4.75% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
For a whole year, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that countryside getaway with the family. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.65% gross. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Lewis Goodall.
Well,
Well, very good morning to you. The time is 10:04. Lewis Goodall sitting in for James O'Brien all this week on LBC. And what an extraordinary, remarkable, insert your superlative here, evening it was, late afternoon at the White House, with the sight of so many European leaders descending upon Washington, D.C. to protect almost bodyguard-like, phalanx-like Volodymyr Zelensky, to try and ensure that there was no repeat of the bust-up, the showdown in the Oval Office that we saw back in February. Was it a success or not? I'll share my thoughts with you on that in a second. What we can say is that there is already further movement this morning. The Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, is going to chair a virtual meeting of the so-called Coalition of the Willing, his phrase, this morning, to update leaders on the outcome of what discussions in Washington yesterday. That's the coalition, a group of nations, essentially, including the UK, France, Germany, that have pledged to protect peace, to act as a guarantor of peace in Ukraine when and if it is achieved. German Chancellor Friedrich Merz saying the meeting will discuss those security guarantees which were proffered, hinted at, insinuated by Donald Trump yesterday. More on that in a second. Poland's Prime Minister Donald Tusk will also attend. Meanwhile, the former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev posted his disdain for the group on social media this morning. The anti-Russian warmongering Coalition of the Willing failed to outplay at POTUS on his turf, he wrote on X. And that, I think, embodies exactly where we're at this morning, which is a six-month-long fight, battle for Trump's ear, for his perception. That is what everything yesterday was about. When you saw European leader after European leader kiss the ring of Donald Trump, get to bow down in front of him, be obsequious even towards him, it was about inhabiting the universe of Trump. When they said things about how brilliant the trade deal was with the EU, about how much closer he's brought Europe to peace than has been the case for 3.5 years. It is not because they believe any of this stuff, essentially. Most of them will have little time for Trump. It is all about trying to court his heart and soul and trying to convince him as to which side is the true impediment to peace and the path to the Nobel Peace Prize he so desperately craves. That was what Vladimir Putin was doing in Alaska on Friday. That is what Keir Starmer, Friedrich Merz, Emmanuel Macron, Ursula von der Leyen and others were doing in Washington yesterday. Russia, for its part, has shown what an impediment to peace it is just overnight, despite those talks in the White House on Monday. Ukrainian officials reporting fresh attacks launched by Russia overnight. Overnight, Ukraine's foreign minister, Andrei Sybiha, had posted on X this morning. Overnight, Russia launched 270 drones, as well as ballistic and cruise missiles into Ukraine. There's been damage to the energy infrastructure and injured civilians. This once again demonstrates how critical it is to end the killing, achieve a lasting peace, and ensure robust security guarantees. So where are we after last night? Well, as always with these things, there's a positive and negative side of the ledger. This is my brief assessment as to where we are. Positives. Trump was charmed by Zelensky, by comparison to last time. The suit gambit clearly worked well. Zelensky handled that adroitly and with some aplomb. It wasn't worse than last time. It was much better. That said, that is a low bar. Pretty much the only way it could have been worse than last time if they'd ended up in a fist fight with each other. But clearly, it went much better. The Western leaders played Trump well. They appealed to his vanity. They appealed to his ego, which is pretty much the only thing they could do in this situation. The ball is back in Putin's court to some extent. He has now got to decide whether to have a bilateral meeting with Zelensky, something he has been very reluctant to do because he has described Zelensky as a Nazi and described him as an illegitimate leader, all of these lies and nonsense and mendacity. So that is something he will now be under some pressure to do, although I suspect he will just try and kick it into the long grass. Trump clearly wants a deal. I mean, you used to say, think of Trump as an isolationist. He's not acting like an isolationist now, far from it. He's putting himself at the center of the global order. He wants, for whatever reason, I think some noble reasons, I think he genuinely does want to stop the killing. I think it horrifies him when he sees it on cable news, which he watches a lot of. He clearly is desperate for a Nobel Peace Prize, more prosaically and more selfishly, but nonetheless, he clearly wants something. He's not a disinterested party in this or an uninterested party. He wants something to come out of it, which the European leaders are trying to clearly play with. That's all positive. On the negative side, these security guarantees which have been hinted at, they are highly nebulous.